you're getting married. Heard you're getting married. This time you're really sure.
All right, it's us. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. On Friday, our producer Kevin got married almost immediately after the show. Right? Is that accurate?
Not really.
It's like 6:30?
Yeah, 6 o'clock, 6:30. He got married very soon after the show.
Who was on time?
We were
I got to tell you, Steve and I, as shocked could be, and Las Vegas odds makers, same thing.
You guys were there before me, but that wasn't the deal. The deal was you thought I wouldn't be there at the
positive.
Start.
You were the last to arrive and the last to leave.
Yes.
I wasn't the last to arrive.
Of the WGN
I know, you guys
staffers.
Like turned into grandparents, and it's like the dinner's over, and you're like, you hit the dessert table, and it's like, okay, see you later. You guys are leaving? You all left as a bunch.
I'd put a few of the desserts in Sharon's purse, and we didn't want them to get crushed, so.
I didn't get any desserts.
I took them.
Can I tell you, we brought home, they serve these lovely miniature tarts.
Or tartlets?
Tartlets, if you will. Will you?
I got called that a couple times that night.
A couple people have said, who's the tartlet at table 10? and we brought home three.
And I was so relieved when they were talking about Wendy.
It was Wendy. Yeah. It was not you, Steve. It was Wendy.
This time.
So there were a bunch of them. After everybody chose a couple, there were some left over. And we said, let's bring a couple home to my daughter, Reese. So we put them carefully in a little napkin, and Terry held them throughout the car ride most of the way home. And then at some point in the car ride, I decided it's time to hold hands with Terry, and I reached over and grabbed her hand, and that's where the tartlets were. So they didn't make the trip home, and I still have key lime whipped cream on my hand, still.
I forgot to get the dessert.
Oh, so good.
It was so good. Everything was good.
We have a goofy picture that we should post on our Facebook page because they had a photo booth. And, you know, I like that thing. You can rent a photo booth. Mm-hmm. I had noticed Kevin went to a bunch of weddings prior to his.
Yeah.
And he has some of those three-shot pictures from other people's weddings. I'm like, what a cute idea. And it is.
It's a lot looser than your standard posed photograph at a wedding that we've all had over the years.
Is it okay for us to post that?
I think so, sure.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Did you look at the goofy one I sent you?
I've not seen it yet.
Well, you should look at it.
I'm going to post it now. He said, okay, I'm putting it up.
You can put it up. We have the official wedding photograph from Kevin and Sarah's wedding. We posted that earlier this morning. So if you want to see what we're referring to, everybody looked lovely. The whole
bridal party.
Everybody looked nice. You kept saying they look like models, and they did. They looked like models. And we all realized at the same time that we are now at the stage in our lives where we are at the cranky old person table at the wedding reception.
I was not cranky.
No, that was cranky right there.
Yep.
I was not. I was on my best behavior. If you noticed, I was acting prim and proper, and I wasn't very loud.
You were not cranky, and I only say that because do you remember when you went to weddings, most of the people at this wedding were in their 20s or 30s.
Yeah.
Remember when you'd look over at another table and you go, who invited the old people? We're at that table now.
We totally were.
Yep.
I'll tell you, when you left in a wave, you and Steve and his lovely wife Sharon, and you and your lovely wife Terry,
mm-hmm.
and Stephanie and her friend
mm-hmm.
that I can't remember her name.
Candy.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They all left, and then Jim just kind of looked at me with sad eyes. I said, "What? We're dancing, but they, your friends,
mm-hmm.
they left."
Right.
I said, "Okay, well, we can hang for a little while longer." And he goes, they're all 20.
Yeah.
They are all. They
That's
were
what
young.
Happened. That's what happens.
I'm younger than, you know, his parents. I was one
I
of the
know.
Older people there.
I know.
But we stayed a little bit, and I think we made it home by 11:30.
Kevin's father's speech, all the speeches were nice. Everybody who made a speech, all the, you know, the bridal party makes a speech and some family members. Kevin's father's speech in particular was so beautiful, especially the part he said at some point to Kevin in a toast, "You are my hero." And that was a nice moment.
I did not have a dry eye during the toast.
I was just going to ask if you two, because we talked about who was going to cry.
It was emotional.
It really was. The ceremony was pretty emotional, too. They wrote their own vows, and both Sarah and Kevin got a little verklempt.
Yes.
I was watching him because of your conversation Friday. I was trying to watch him watch the bride enter the room.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And it was choking up time.
Yep.
This is so sweet.
They are really a sweet couple. They really are. And they're so much in love. And so I was a little weepy during the vows. And then when the dad spoke, there was this one point where his dad said, you know, Kevin is my hero. I'm so proud of him.
Yeah.
He said, you know, whenever I talk about him, I feel 10 feet tall and my chest is all puffed out and I'm hitting Jimmy Mack going, remember this for our kid's wedding, because it was awesome.
Yeah, very genuine, very heartfelt.
I have goosebumps right now thinking about it.
Every part of his speech, all the speeches, like I said. And then
toasts.
The toasts. You know, I was also wondering this. I'm not a religious person at all, and I've been to so many weddings over the years where so much of the time is spent not just with it being a mass, but they read you, you know, stories from the Bible, scripture stories, parables, that sort of fortune cookies. They read you all this stuff. And I like it better when it's personal. Like everything that they said yesterday, the vows and all during the on Friday, all that was very personal. It was them. And I always think that's what a wedding should be. We did that at our wedding. I understand if you're religious that that plays some part in it, but it's so much more personal when you're telling that other person's story, you know?
But they can personalize it as well during a Catholic Mass, which we had Father Hal Stanger, who totally personalized it.
Did he?
It.
Yeah.
There was still scripture, but it was about love. And
yeah.
I was very happy with ours. But this, even Jim said, he goes, this might have been better than ours.
Oh. How'd you react to that?
I said, you're right. I mean, just the place was amazing. The Ravenswood Event Center.
Very nice.
They brought you into a little area for the actual ceremony, which was beautiful, loft-like,
yeah,
with exposed brick. And then you went downstairs for a little cocktail area with hors d'oeuvres, and there was this porch area.
Mm-hmm.
And it
might be the most fun I've ever had at a wedding.
How about that?
Really,
yeah,
best feeling beginning to end. Really.
4 stars, says Steve Bertrand, WGN News.
Of Steve Bertrand Travel?
Yes.
You should book some trips to the Ravenswood Event Center.
Right.
It was really just a unique experience.
Yeah.
It was classy and traditional in a sense, but not stuffy.
Right. Right.
It was really, really great.
Now, Sarah's father, I have a history of hugging him, and here's why. When he came into the studio, he's new to our country, and when he came in last week with both of his daughters, everybody was hugging his daughters, and he was just kind of standing by, and I went, he feels unloved right now. I'm going to jump in, and I'm going to hug him. Well, then at the ceremony, because now I've set a precedent with him, 3 different hugs, first when I saw him, and then after the ceremony, then when I was leaving. But he did, on one occasion during the reception, he gave me that thing. You know that Robert De Niro thing that he does in Parents where he points at me and points his eyes and
the
then points
fingers,
back as if,
yeah,
I'm watching you.
Why was he watching you?
I'm not sure.
He's scared of you.
I think he's watching me to know if there's more hugs coming, I think.
You don't watch someone for something good.
I don't know.
And point it out. If you point it out, you're watching for mischief.
He let me know that his eyes were upon me, and if something went wrong, I would be blamed for it. Now, I'm fine with that. Nothing went wrong, but he did make it known that his eyes were upon me.
Well, I felt compelled to hug him because you had hugged
him. Yeah, everyone should hug him.
So then I hugged him and got the kiss on each cheek.
There was at the ceremony, there was a hugging station that he was at a booth, and you could hug him and give the money to charity, and everybody did.
A beautiful time. And
wasn't it?
Seriously, go to our Facebook page, Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder, because there's a picture of the bridal party.
The official picture. It's stunning. Everybody looks so
seriously,
nice.
Seriously, they could be models. They should be on Chicago Bride Magazine.
Yeah.
Or just more national, not just
local. And Steve, you weren't supposed to jump into the official photographs. You did on most of them, and that's fine.
Well, I thought they'd want me there.
Well, they did.
Right.
But it just took a little extra time. But that's all right. Everybody, you know, you do what you want.
I was just so moved by the whole thing, I couldn't help it.
It really was beautiful, and congratulations, because really, we just love Kevin. And Bertrand kept saying that all night, you know, I just love
Kevin.
He's
just a great guy.
He is.
You know,
but
and to be part of that, it was just so much fun.
Yeah.
But we really sound like the old table.
I know. Yeah.
He's such a great kid.
You're so cute. You guys are so cute.
A lot of cheek pinching. Whatever. Come on.
All right. Call me Aunt Steve.
Right. A quick break and then more show. If you want to jump in, we welcome you at 312-981-7200. What'd you think of Kevin's wedding? Back after this, it's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Once again, if you visit our Facebook page, that's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on Facebook, you can see the official wedding shot from Kevin's wedding They couldn't look lovelier. Everybody there, the whole bridal party, just stunning.
Somebody's sick of the wedding talk already.
All right, enough of the wedding talk.
All right, I can't wait for our next guest. I almost wish he was going to come on right now. He's going to explain where swearing came from.
Yeah.
I would say from my lineage. Although I can't say that. My mom never swore.
Your mom was not a swearer.
Not at all.
Did it bother her? We've established on the show that you, from time to time...
No, I swear more than anyone you've ever met, which is a total lie.
It's true.
I don't believe
you. You swear more than everyone I know put together.
Okay,
you
anyway.
Do. But your mom was not a swearer.
She never did.
How did she feel about your propensity to swear?
I knew when to use it. I didn't really swear in front of her.
Oh. Oh.
And that's why my husband explains, that's why I swear so much, because I didn't swear in front of my mom. I can't swear on the air, and for 30 years I've been on the radio holding back because I've never slipped. I think one time with you when we worked at another station at night, I had to hit the button on myself.
I forgot about
that. And it was just the S word. It wasn't anything bad, but I had to dump myself. So the fact that I hold back so much is why I let her rip when I'm off the air.
Interesting. What about your brother and your sister? Are
they don't swear very
much. What about your dog?
Yes.
Your dog is a swearer.
My childhood dog.
Right.
Tiki doesn't swear.
Yeah, now.
In fact, I feel guilty swearing in front of Tiki and undressing in front of him. I honest to God do.
Do you?
It's like,
that's
you know,
funny.
What are you looking at? And I cover up.
Well, your dog's very judgmental. I've seen your dog in some situations. Hey, this is, with Kevin gone on his honeymoon, he's gone for, is it a 6-week honeymoon? How long has he gone for?
He's gone for
a long time.
Yeah.
Joey's filling in. He did last week for a couple of days, and he's filling in today and tomorrow. And Joey, as you pointed out, was involved in some news over the weekend.
Right, and we don't really have time to talk about it now.
Yeah.
But I do want to talk about it. Joey Gelman, you went to U of I, and there was breaking news as people were shot on, it was Saturday night.
Yeah, Saturday night and Sunday morning.
And Roger Badish put a post on his Facebook page saying that, you know, Roger tried to call the U of I police department, the Champaign police department, and couldn't really find any details.
Mm-hmm.
So, Joey, who did you end up calling to get the breaking story?
So that block right there is really in the heart of campus. And so I worked for the Daily Illini and WPGU radio and newspaper, which is right there in the hub. And so at 1 a.m., those students were the only ones covering the story. So we reached out to the newspaper editor down there. All the reporters and him were on the scene. And so I was able to connect him with Roger and put him through to get literally minute by minute up to date on what had happened, because no other outlet had it. So it was a bad circumstance, but a great resource definitely to use in that scenario, because I know as much as maybe not everyone went to U of I, a lot of people connect to it, especially
sure, of course,
being in Chicago.
Yep. Well, nicely done, Joey. What a
thank you.
What a horrible, horrible story.
I know.
Oh,
and,
just awful.
And 11 o'clock, or we'll try at 11, if not sometime today, because I think we should, you know, mention the George Korchev of Mundelein, who was shot and killed, who was supposed to start work as a nurse today in Libertyville. And it's heartbreaking.
Yeah.
And then there's video, a little Snapchat video of a Naperville teacher, a 24-year-old teacher who was down there to celebrate her birthday. And she had seen a group of people congregating, and she said, "This looks like trouble." And her friend kind of said, "Oh, come on, you're just being paranoid." And so she was Snapchatting something, and you can hear 5 shots.
Yeah.
And it's just frightening.
It is. It definitely is.
You know, and you hear over the weekend in LaGrange, I heard these pop, 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 and I had to double check. I had to run outside. It was far away, but are they firecrackers? Are they gunshots? It's a scary world now, and you can never be sure.
There was a time, we're going back a little bit, that if you heard those noises, that's the first thing you would assume is, why would somebody be blowing fireworks off today?
But, or you thought a car backfired.
Right. It'd be one of those.
That was really old, since we're at the old table.
Right.
That's what you'd really think of, because I don't think cars backfire anymore.
I don't think they do anymore.
But you know what I'm talking
about?
Yeah,
sure, of course. Yeah.
And that's what you'd think of. But now I'm not living in fear. I am not being an alarmist. But your way of thinking certainly has changed, I would imagine. I know mine has.
Yeah.
And
no
now
doubt
more
that.
Shootings today and yesterday. And we'll cover that later on. After the news, we're going to find out where the F swearing came from.
I think this will be a good thing for you. Because you want to know, if you're interested in something, don't you want to know its history, the roots of how something came about? Like, you know how I read that book about Abner Doubleday because I love baseball. I want to know about the roots of baseball. This would be like your Abner Doubleday.
Also, sometime today, I would like to make a toast.
Yeah.
I brought in an Arnold Palmer, which is very hard for me to say, but I order this when we go out to lunch with management.
I've seen you do it.
I order it. This is my drink, but I didn't invent this drink. We'll also find out the origin of this drink.
The king died last night. We found out last night that Arnold Palmer had passed away. Very, very sad. The tributes have just been pouring in almost immediately last night. I was watching the Cubs game. Well, we'll talk about it more, but during the Cubs game, they broke word of it last night, and then the tributes were just nonstop throughout the game. Rightfully so. Probably meant more to golf than any other professional golfer ever, wouldn't you imagine?
Yeah, I mean, for a while, he was the only golf person I knew the name of.
He barely won in your lifetime.
That's true.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
He was always a former golfer.
But last night when they announced it, I thought to myself, when I was a kid, I think everybody knew his name, Jack Nicklaus, Gary Player, and maybe Lee Trevino. Those were your four.
Gary Player, I didn't know.
Lee
Trevino, yes.
Lee Trevino, yeah. And there's a couple other names that kind of hovered, but those were the names that somebody said, quick, who's the best golfer? How would you not say Arnold Palmer's name, right? Impossible. So, yeah, we'll talk about that. There's a whole lot coming your way. Stick around. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
All right, now that I know what we're going to talk about, it is really hard for me to hold back.
So you're going to swear.
Well, maybe
you
should do the introduction because the F word is the best word in the whole wide world.
Yeah,
it really
is.
It so is. It can, you know, be happiness or anger or satisfaction or let's just get to Professor.
All right.
Professor Ben Bergen, professor in the Department of Cognitive Science, Director of Language and Cognition Lab. This is Ben Bergen. Hi, Professor.
Hi there. Good morning.
I also want to mention really quickly that Ben has written a book that, Wendy, if I didn't already have a Christmas present for you, this would be your Christmas gift. Where the F did cussing come from? That is the book.
I don't like the word cussing, I got to be honest with you.
That's the word that offends you. The F part of the title you're fine with. It's the cussing part that you find offensive.
I like to say swearing, but University of California at San Diego Professor Ben Bergen will talk to us about this right now. I seem to swear a lot out there. I cuss a lot. I'll say it right now. Bill claims I swear more than anyone combined that he's ever met.
And I hang with pirates and truck drivers.
I can't do it on the radio, but swear words have been around for a long time, haven't they, Professor?
In English, they've been around for centuries, even for millennia, but not necessarily the same words. So your favorite F word wasn't particularly profane in Shakespeare's time. That's a relatively new invention.
Aha!
But is it said in any... Because I've read most of Shakespeare's plays, and I don't remember it being said.
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of words that were you know, common, but maybe didn't make their way up into these masterworks. But yeah, I mean, the strongest word in Shakespeare's day would have been swive, which we don't use anymore, but it's basically like the F word of his day.
I hope we dumped that.
I didn't, and I didn't know what to do.
You can't be saying swive on the radio. What does swive, what does the word that you just said mean?
It comes from an old root meaning literally to screw.
Oh.
Like the word, the modern English word screw, it's sort of taken on a second meaning as well.
Could you say Mother Swiver?
Will you shut up?
I don't see why not.
All right, I'm going to start saying that.
All right, but there have been numerous studies that, and Bill has, I'll tell you Bill's study. If you swear you're dumb, you could use better words. Now, I have heard that people who swear are actually more intelligent. Your thoughts on this?
Well, there are only a couple studies on this, and they're usually conducted with the people that we have most easy access to, which is, you know, college psychology majors. But when you look at them and you ask them to produce as much profanity as they can in a short period of time, the people who are best able to produce profanity actually have the best vocabularies in the rest of the language as well.
Wow.
So that's not causal, right? We don't know that it's because of the profanity that it makes them better at language. Probably what's going on is that people who love language and all of its manifestations tend towards the spicier language as well as the more mundane.
Ben, here's what my parents taught my brother and myself, that it's really easy to just swear, to pull out a string of profanity, but the challenge is to get your point across by not swearing. You get that. I'm sure you've heard that before, right?
Sure. I think it's easy to do things that are routines. So if you have some pattern of swear words that you always say whenever you're frustrated or whenever you want to express delight, then yeah, sure, that's an easy thing to say. It's not easy to swear in a creative way, just in the same way that it's not easy to convince someone of something in a creative way. I think that all of language has these more routine and more creative dimensions to it.
Sure.
Now, I will explain that I don't just sit there and talk like the Osbournes, like, hey, what, you know, in common conversation. Honestly, the bulk of my swearing is when I am irritated, which seems to be a lot. But that's when I swear, is when I get mad. You know, you stub your toe, you drop something, the kids aren't listening. That's when I go to the swear word.
It's pretty common for people to feel like profanity can be a sort of means of catharsis, right? You feel bad, you feel stressed, you feel angry, you feel anxious, and swearing alleviates that a little bit. We don't have much evidence about that, but the one thing that we do have evidence about, and this comes from a couple of studies from England actually, is that swearing can alleviate pain. So what they did was they had people stick their hands into nearly freezing water and hold them there as long as they could. This is super painful, but it's not harmful. And half of the people were told to swear, and half of them were told not to swear. And the ones who were told to swear could actually hold their hands in there nearly twice as long.
But now, does that explain something, like you're kind of releasing some of that pain, like you're acknowledging it, like, oh, darn it. It just kind of, it does work as kind of a cathartic thing, doesn't it?
Yeah, here's the theory underlying it. It apparently releases something that we sort of know colloquially as a fight or flight reflex. It engages your body to prepare for some sort of threat. So your heart rate starts increasing, your blood pressure goes up, your skin starts sweating, and all of these things are associated with preparation for a threat. And you experience less pain when you're having this fight or flight reflex, and so that allows you to endure more punishment.
Ben, I'm afraid. I'm deathly afraid of needles. I have a horrible fear of needles. And when I'm about to get a shot, I say to the doctor or nurse who's going to administer the shot, pick your favorite swear word, because I'm going to say it 1,000 times in the next 30 seconds, and that's the only thing that gets me through the shot.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like you should be doing this research yourself.
So when was that discovered? When did somebody realize if I'm hammering in a nail and I hit my thumb, I want to yell out a swear word? Can we trace that back to a specific time?
Well, probably the first caveman.
Oh, yeah?
But you know, the experimental research on it is very new. This is only in the last 5 years. I think the first study on cold water immersion was from 2012. So yeah, this is quite recent that we actually have science on this.
Why are most cuss words four letters?
that's yeah. The best question in history. Why is that?
Yeah, I actually have a chapter in the book on that. It's called "What Makes a Four-Letter Word." If you look at English profanity, you do find that there are more four-letter words than you'd expect. But it's not about the letters. What's really going on is that we have a particular sound pattern that, for English speakers, sounds like a profane word. It's one syllable long, and it has consonants all over the place. In particular, it has these strong, hard stop consonants at the ends.
Sure.
It sounds like k and t and so on.
Yeah.
And English profane words tend to follow this pattern. And when new words are invented, when new words are added to the profane vocabulary, they also tend to follow this pattern, probably because they just sound to us profane.
Is there a part of the world where swearing is more prevalent and a part of the world where it's less prevalent?
My house.
Yeah, Wendy's house is ground zero.
Well, for sure. If you look across languages and cultures, you see that there are places where it's much more, there's much more of a belief that there are certain words that are just bad and you shouldn't use them in certain contexts, like over broadcast radio, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Like here, in fact, we have a relatively highly censored regime for public language. But by comparison, a place like, oh, I don't know, like Japan, there's really no concept whatsoever of words themselves being bad words. There's no word that would get bleeped on Japanese radio. You can insult people. You can call them a fool and tell them that their parents are like dogs. There are lots of ways to insult people.
Wow.
But the word dog wouldn't be a bad word. It's just the word dog, and the word fool isn't a bad word. So this idea that there are certain words that are inappropriate for certain circumstances is kind of, it's a cultural belief.
This is really fascinating to me. The book is Where the F Did Cussing Come From? And we are talking to Professor Ben Bergen. Book is available anywhere in particular, Amazon, bookstores, your website?
Well, all the places that you acquire books, and just a small correction, the actual title, I know the title in the New York Times today was Where the F Does Cussing Come From, but the actual book title is What the F, What Swearing Reveals About Our Language, Our Brains, and Ourselves.
Okay.
All right, we're going to put you on hold for a minute, and we have many more questions for you that I will filter out the swear words while talking to you. Hang on one second. It's Dr. Professor Ben Bergen, University of California at San Diego. WTF. Can I say that?
You can say that.
All right.
Sure.
312-981-7200. It's Bill Leff, Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN. A word is just a word unless there's a four-letter word. Then it's...
Yeah. Then there's problems.
Yeah, it is.
Ben Bergen has written a book, What the F? What Swearing Reveals About Our Language, Our Brains, and Ourself.
All right, Professor Ben Bergen, University of California at San Diego. Here are some questions. I think listeners are scared to call in, but we get texts. See, no one trusts themselves. You have to edit yourself.
Sure.
Many people have said that the F word is an acronym for something. I know there is a Van Halen album with the alleged acronym, and other people say it means something else. Any truth to that?
Unfortunately, there's not. I mean, these are really creative acronyms for unlawful carnal knowledge and so on. I think that's what you're... Yeah, no, not at all. This is a very, very old Indo-European root that goes back thousands and thousands of years. And actually, in the deep history, before English even, it meant something like to hit or to strike, and then came to be used for a particular type of hitting or striking. It's meant a variety of things, but never has been an acronym.
All right, who says a bad word is a bad word, according to a texter from the 815 area code?
Who makes that decision?
Ooh, that's a great question. Well, of course, we have these social institutions. We're on broadcast radio, and so the FCC will fine your station if any of us says a particular word. Now, the problem is that they don't give you a list.
Right. There has never been a list. They refer to George Carlin's list of
the seven words,
yeah,
you can't say.
But they don't, the FCC does not have a list.
That's right. So really, it's somewhere in the FCC's consciousness. They decide what they think is profane and what they think is obscene. So at least over broadcast radio and television, that's who decides. Movies, it's the MPAA. They decide what makes something R or PG, and of course, they don't also have a list. So much of it is actually in the hands of invisible people who make decisions in boardrooms behind curtains.
Ben, I've noticed that every good swear word has like a watered-down, almost generic version. Like if the word damn is too strong, somebody invented darn. So how did that become a thing that somebody said, well, these words are swear words and they're great, but we got to do like a kid's version of them all?
Yeah, there's actually a name for that kid's version. It's a minced oath, as though you were cutting the oath into little bits. The motivation seems pretty clear. I think that you want to express a strong emotion. That's what profanity is for. You were saying earlier that you use them for times when you're particularly frustrated or angry, and that's one kind of emotion. But also when you're elated, when you're, say, your baseball team locks up a division title. Then maybe you express that using profanity. So you want to use them to express emotion, but at the same time, there are all these social norms about, well, I can't say it here, I can't say it there, what if there's a kid around? And so the solution is you say a word that allows you to start with the same force and same power and emotional motivation as the word that you're talking about, but at the end, you kind of hide it a little bit.
That's for wussies. That's all I'm going to say. If you're going to say it, say it.
Come on.
So what are the consequences of swearing? I really do try to use them in a setting. We went to a wedding over the weekend. I didn't swear. I don't swear on the air. I never swore around my mom. I mean, there are places you don't swear, but do people still look at you poorly if you swear? Or is that changing?
Yeah, well, there are definitely social consequences. And I agree that it is changing, or at least the words are changing that people find most offensive. But they're not all negative consequences. So you're right that in certain circumstances, if you were to stand up at a wedding, for example, give a toast and we're full of profanity, it might not be taken exactly the right way by maybe even some of the older guests. But at the same time, there are lots of positive consequences. So people use profanity in informal situations to create social familiarity, to show their sort of ease and casual relations with other people, to be funny. I mean, a lot of humor is built around the use of breaking of taboos, and using profanity in public is a way to break taboos, and people think that that's funny. So there's lots of positive social consequences to it too. It seems to depend a lot on the context, though.
So swear words pull out the strongest emotions in other people. This is in the book, and I have to ask you this question to explain this. Even stroke victims who have lost the ability to speak are still capable of spontaneously cursing. Hmm. How does that happen?
Yeah, well, it turns out that, we usually think of language, for those of us who think about this kind of thing, we think about language as housed mostly in the left hemisphere of the brain, the left side of the brain. And that's why people who are really good with language and analytical are often described as left brains. That's not, there's a bunch of hooey in there, but language is mostly left lateralized. But the thing is, when you have strokes that affect the left hemisphere of the brain, or even in certain cases, when you have the entire left hemisphere removed, patients still are able to swear spontaneously. And what that seems to mean is that there's a different source for the spontaneous, emotional, strong swears. And we've actually started to be able to localize where that is. It's an evolutionarily old part of the brain that is closely tied to emotion centers, and its job is to select actions and suppress inappropriate actions on the basis of those strong emotions. So it's basically like it's deciding, okay, I am feeling the strong emotion, what should I do about it? And so it's a completely different and, like I said, evolutionarily old part of the brain that produces these spontaneous swears.
Ben, doesn't that tie in directly to Tourette's syndrome, where the sufferer knows exactly what he or she isn't supposed to say, but because of the syndrome, they're saying it repeatedly?
That's exactly right. So in about 10% of cases of people with Tourette's syndrome, they have this the symptom called coprolalia, which is the uncontrollable production of swears or other taboo words.
Maybe that's what I have.
You have Tourette's syndrome, yeah. Wendy.
No,
you
I
do.
Don't have Tourette's, but, no?
Coprolalia?
Yeah, if I could say it.
Francis Ford Coprolalia, that's what you have.
but you're right. You're exactly right. Tourette's syndrome affects that same evolutionarily old part of the brain, the basal ganglia. And it's exactly because people are having trouble suppressing these very strong emotional verbal responses that they come out in inappropriate places.
And just so you know, Tourette's syndrome, I believe, is called tic disorder now, and it's not just swearing.
Yeah,
other
people
could have
it.
Other things,
sure.
But it's like impulse control. They're unable to control it.
Yeah.
This is really fascinating to me. And Ben Bergen on the line with us. The name of the book again, why don't you say it? Make sure we'll say it right.
I'll say it. It's What the F, What Swearing Reveals About Our Language, Our Brains, and Ourselves.
And it's available where any books are sold, like Amazon, a bookstore, which there are still a few. And do you have a website, Ben?
You can just Google Ben Bergen, and I should be there. There are some other Ben Bergens, but they're all imitators.
Accept no imitations. Get the original Ben Bergen. That's the way to do it.
And very quickly, before we let you go, we don't have a lot of time, but you have to help me. Is there any way I can stop swearing?
Well, do you want to?
No,
I don't know.
No.
Well, of course, people can learn to make decisions about the social context of their behavior. But in my talking with people, most of them feel that they find a lot of value in having a variety of different types of language that they can use for different purposes.
All right, I'll keep it at that.
All right.
I like you, Ben. You're my new best friend. So nice to talk to you, sir, and I look forward to reading the book. Again, it's Ben Bergen, University of California at San Diego, professor in the Department of Cognitive Science, director of Language and Cognition Lab, a linguist, and the book, What the F, What Swearing Reveals About Our Language, Our Brains, and Ourself. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
And thanks for teaching us swive, because I'm going to go to Shakespeare festivals and yell that out in the middle of them now.
You'll be very popular.
I know. Thanks, Ben.
Thank you so much.
We'll take a quick break. And then more show. Steve has the news in just a moment. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Thank you, Steve. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder here. And again, there was a shooting Saturday night into Sunday morning at U of I. Joey Gelman, you went to U of I, and this was right near the apartment you lived at. Any details you would like to throw in?
Yeah, like I said earlier, it was right in the heart, really, where the downtown, if you will, in campus, where there's all the bars, all the apartments, all the restaurants. So it's everyone's main path to the quad. And obviously on a Saturday night, that's a hotbed for everyone to go out.
Sure.
And so unfortunately, it was wrong place, wrong time. And one of my friends was involved, one of the ones shot. He's okay. But it's his buddy that passed away. And so, you know, thoughts and condolences to him and his family and to my friend, obviously, and his thoughts for their family. But it was just a difficult situation. I'm glad we got it covered here because that was important because people needed to know what was going on, and especially at an odd hour. But it was just a very surreal moment because that's a walk I've done for 4 years.
Seems like a safe walk.
It's an
well-lit.
Right. You stay there because it's the most well-lit, the most well-populated, and you know, they lived in the building I lived in last year, so simply doing their walk home from the bars or going out like we always would, and unfortunately, that night it wasn't the best option and tragic.
Champaign police say the shooting started about 12:40 a.m., stemming apparently from an argument shortly after midnight at an apartment party on Green Street, which, as Joey said, was the commercial heart of the campus. The preliminary investigation completely points to an argument taking place at the party. The argument spilled out onto the street, and that's when a fight occurred. And they're not quite sure what started the fight. And then George Korchev of Mundelein was a bystander who was shot and killed after that argument. Just walking by, not involved at all. Same thing with his three friends. And so sorry to hear he was pronounced dead just after 1 a.m. And then there was a person fleeing the gunfire who was hit by a car on Green Street. Because seriously, you hear gunshots, you got to get out of there.
Right.
Minor injuries for that person. And then there was a woman who was celebrating her 23rd birthday. And she said, boy, there's a here, Catherine Lawler of Naperville, a May graduate of U of I. She caught some of the gunfire on a cell phone recording on Snapchat, which I played for you. It's just pop, pop, pop. I mean, it doesn't even sound like guns to me. It sounds like fireworks.
Right. Yeah.
Lawler is a teacher. She said she was celebrating her 23rd birthday, where she's had such good times in the past. As she was heading to the Red Lion, excuse me, a well-known bar, she walked past an empty lot where she says she saw 100 to 200 people gathered. The group was loud, and even though no one seemed angry or aggressive, she kind of whispered to her friend, "This looks like bad news to me. Something doesn't seem right." And her friends dismissed her as overly cautious. And then so she was Snapchatting as she was walking down the street. And moments later, the shots rang out as she began to Snapchat.
It's so frightening. It really is. You know, you just see this normal picture or video, I guess, that you've seen 1,000 times. And then from out of nowhere, the shots start ringing out. It's so awful.
And Korchev, a patient care tech, he recently passed his nursing board exams. He was supposed to begin a position as a registered nurse at Advocate Condell today, I believe, in Libertyville. That's when he was supposed to start. He said that he did want to go on and be a doctor.
Yeah.
And it's really tragic.
Yeah, it is. It's awful. We're going to do this. We'll take a quick break, and then we'll talk about yesterday in sports. So many things, so many emotional things happened yesterday.
You're not talking about the Bears.
No, that's not. No, I can't.
It's incapable of getting any emotion out of you anymore.
No, yeah, that's just beyond. Yeah. The day started out yesterday, as most of us found out about the death of Jose Fernandez. If you're a fan of baseball, you know that he was one of the best up-and-coming pitchers I've ever seen. I mean, he just had everything going for him. Very young guy, 24 years old. He died in a boating accident along with two friends. So it started out on an emotional wave, and then it ended later on at night as we find out that Arnold Palmer also died yesterday. Strange bookends to a very emotional day. Really strange. So we'll do this. We'll take a little break, and then we'll explore that and other things. If you want to jump in, we invite you to at 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. All right, so yesterday was an extremely emotional day in the world of sports. Jose Fernandez, one of the game's brightest stars, very young guy, just 24 years old, died in a boating accident in Miami. The game that the Marlins were supposed to play against the Atlanta Braves was canceled. They say postponed, but I believe this late in the season with neither team really vying for a playoff spot, I think that game will not happen. I'd be shocked. Later on, we find out that Arnold Palmer passed away, golf legend, to many, the finest golfer of all time. And then also on a happier note, because both of those were extremely, very sad stories, David Ross, who I'm sure you've heard me mention before. I think he's one of the unsung heroes of this year's Cubs team. David Ross is a guy who the team calls Grandpa. He's a lot older than the rest of the team.
Is he a catcher?
He's a catcher. He's one of three Cubs catchers. At the end of last season, David Ross announced his retirement. He said, this is it. This is last season. I've had a great career in baseball, but it's time for me to hang him up. And Cubs management came to him and said, hey, we have a plan, and that plan is to win the World Series, and we really think that you should be a part
plan,
of this.
It's a good plan, by the way.
It's a great plan. The previous 108 campaigns had a similar plan that went south on them. But this plan seems to be a good one. So they convinced David Ross to come back for one more year. They said, you know, we really want to do this, and we want you to be a part of it. You help our young pitching staff, and you have so much wisdom and knowledge, and you're a good guy. So they convinced him to come back. Well, last night was going to be the last home game of David Ross's career as a member of the Cubs. So every time he came up to bat, he got a standing ovation, including in the middle of the game, he got a standing ovation. And all he did is crank a home run, his 10th of the season. And then at the end, they took him. I've never seen this in baseball before. Usually the manager comes out and he signals the bullpen and they pull the pitcher. Well, yesterday they did this, but they took him out. And the only reason they took him out late in the game in the seventh was that the fans could once again recognize him, and they did, and it was beautiful. He was crying. A lot of the players were crying. It was so nice.
There is crying in baseball.
There is crying in baseball, as it turns out. So it was one happy note on a very emotional day.
My question to you, after Jose Fernandez's death, is it common for a team to cancel a game?
Yeah, it happens every now and then. It's not. You know, luckily these tragedies are
so
few
late
and far
in the
between.
Season? Or
no,
would they have the, if this
no,
was regular?
No, they would have done it. They've done it in the past. There have been other kind of freak deaths. There was another boating accident where three Cleveland Indian pitchers died about 12, 15 years ago that they canceled. There have been, like I said, because these incidents luckily are not that common, but when it does, they're savvy enough to know the players' heads aren't in it. Each baseball game that was played yesterday, the other 14 games, all paid tribute to Jose Fernandez, and in many of them, including the Cubs game last night, they hung a team jersey, the old team jersey, with his name and number on it. Many of the players yesterday, and baseball used to frown on this, but they let this happen yesterday. A lot of the players yesterday, including the pitcher for the Cardinals, had his initials and number circled. Aroldis Chapman of the Cubs had his embroidered on his cap. I don't know how he pulled that off, but he did. So that was a nice tribute to a fallen star.
We saw pictures of the boat, and I didn't know what a jetty was. They kept saying that it hit a jetty.
Yeah.
And it's just a bunch of rocks that are lined up, I guess sort of like a breaker, but just with rocks.
Yeah.
And it was right at the very end. Not sure if it was misjudged or what. But the whole boat flipped over. It appears speed definitely had something to do with that.
They've alluded to the fact that the boat was more than likely going far too fast for conditions.
And there's still no reports that drugs or alcohol were involved, but TMZ Sports, which I didn't know, TMZ has sports now?
Yeah, there's a sports department there now.
They had said that partying was going on the boat earlier in the day, but at this point...
Yeah.
They're saying no, it wasn't involved in the accident.
On a slightly better note, because there were tributes to Jose Fernandez all over baseball yesterday and all over the news, all over sports, everybody kind of went out of their way to mention his two friends as well. And just because one person is a little better known than the other two, they deserve some sort of tribute as well. So it was said, I'm sure, for all three families, I'm positive, for all three families to lose very young members of their family yesterday in this horrible boating accident. Very, very tragic.
It is tragic.
Yeah.
And I was watching some clips on him. He just seemed like a really sweet guy who defected three times from Cuba.
Yeah.
His grandma finally came to watch him play, and that was a momentous occasion for him.
I'll tell you a story that if you don't know this story, I had heard this a couple of years ago, and somebody reiterated it yesterday, but this is a testament to his character, Jose Fernandez. A couple of years ago, 3 or 4 years ago, when he won the NL Rookie of the Year, he got a fairly sizable check for becoming Rookie of the Year. A lot of times players will have in their contract that if they win the Cy Young Award, or the Most Valuable Player Award, or the Rookie of the Year Award, they get some sort of a bonus. Jose Fernandez did get that bonus, and instead of keeping the money, found out about a girl in Miami who was sick and had a charity, and just wrote the whole check over to the charity, just handed them the check. Jeez. This belongs to you. A lot of players wouldn't do that, but testament to his character. He's a good guy.
And you mentioned Arnold Palmer as well. He passed away Sunday at the age of 87, and I brought my Arnold Palmer in, which I will drink right now.
Can I tell you, I always wondered, there is now a company called Arnold Palmer that makes this drink, and for people who don't know what the drink is, it's half lemonade and half iced tea. I always wondered if he somehow benefited
yeah, it's
from
his.
That. Well, it is now, the Arizona Tea Company, right? Is that the people who make it?
Yeah.
They've picked up on that on the last few years, but for years you could go into any restaurant or bar and ask for that, and they would just mix it up, and I always thought, I hope he's getting a piece of this somehow. I think he did
because isn't his signature on the can and on the bottle?
Yes,
and
now.
The Arnold Palmer.
With now it is.
But how it all started, because, I mean, when we went to Howell's and Hood the other day for lunch, I ordered an Arnold Palmer.
Yeah.
I always get that. It's a great lunch drink when you're not having alcohol.
Yeah.
And he doesn't get credit for that. He doesn't get any kickback from that.
I don't think he does, but you know, there's very few of us. I guess Shirley Temple would know what that feels like, and your friend Harvey Wallbanger, of course, but for most people,
my best friend,
I don't think we'll ever have a drink named after us.
Well, didn't you wonder how it came to be? Did a little research on this. How did a glass of iced tea with a healthy splash of lemonade come to be named after legendary golfer Arnold Palmer? It's more than a splash. It's kind of half and half.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? It's right down the middle.
The drink has many origins. The rumor at Palmer's alma mater was that he developed the beverage at the Wake Forest Dining Hall. Another said it was created by mistake. The real story, if you want to know, the man himself sets the record straight in an entertaining new 30 for 30 short, The Arnold Palmer, and this was originally published in 2012. He said, my wife made a lot of iced tea for lunch, and I said, hey, babe, I've got an idea. You make the iced tea and make a big pitcher, and we'll just put a little lemonade in it and see how that works. We mixed it up, and I got the solution about where I wanted it, and I put the lemonade in it. I had it for lunch after working on the golf course. I thought, boy, this is great, babe. I'm going to take it when I play golf. I'm going to make a thermos of iced tea and lemonade. And then Palmer goes on to tell the story about how he was in a Palm Springs restaurant. He ordered the drink to his specifications and was overheard by a woman sitting nearby who said, I want an Arnold Palmer. I want what he ordered.
Mm-hmm.
And with that, a mixed drink was named, and a legendary golfer extended his influence beyond the course. And then 10 years ago, the rights to the drink were sold to Arizona Beverage Company. Sales exceeded $100 million in 2010.
Wow.
That's just in 2010.
Wow.
And he did die last night. And the weird thing is the season's premiere of The Simpsons.
Yeah.
Listen
that
to this.
That was last night.
Monday. Gonna fill a super soaker full of lemonade. Kyle's gonna fill one with iced tea, and we're gonna Arnold Palmer Lenny when he walks in.
Arnold Palmer Lenny. You're going to Arnold Palmer Lenny.
Yeah, you see, Arnold Palmer was a golfer, and he made up this drink where it's not a full glass of lemonade or a full glass of iced tea.
How weird is that?
That's strange on the same night. Wow.
And they couldn't have known that by the time this was taped and ready to roll.
Now, I always wondered, are you familiar with the golfer John Daly?
Yeah, I've heard of him.
John Daly, fairly heavy set for most of his career. Then he lost a bunch of weight. But John Daly was a big drinker. So there was a version of an Arnold Palmer called a John Daly, which is essentially an Arnold Palmer
with vodka
in it. But I always wondered, knowing that John Daly had something of a drinking problem, if he looked at that as a tribute or a parody. I don't know which is which.
I think it's a little of each.
It's
half a parody and half a tribute, just like the half lemonade and half iced tea.
Yeah. So it's been a rough year for celebrity deaths, and boy, yesterday it was just another chapter as Arnold Palmer, much like Muhammad Ali was to boxing, where people who knew the sport knew that there would never be another Muhammad Ali. That's kind of what Arnold Palmer was to golf, just one of, if not the all-time best. So a tough day, very emotional day yesterday.
And for anyone who is going to make a homemade Arnold Palmer today, if you don't go buy an Arizona iced tea one, just want to let you know that there is a proper way to make the beverage. Like a good golf swing, the Arnold Palmer is all about proper balance. This is what Arnold Palmer says. Iced tea dominates the drink, and if it doesn't, it's not really right.
Oh.
So it is mostly iced tea.
With some lemonade tossed in.
Yes.
Interesting. All right, we'll take a quick break. Kim has the news, and then Eric Zorn will be joining us from the Chicago Tribune. Stay where you are. It's Bill and Wendy at WGN.
They're singing, go, Cubs, go. Go, Cubs, go.
Eric Zorn is here of the Chicago Tribune for years. I think most people know this. Eric was the on-field mascot for the Northside baseball team.
I grew out of the costume.
That was a
gained
sad
too
day.
Much weight, and it was just a shame. Yeah.
Very sad.
I mean,
day.
It's, when it's like, especially when it's a big round Bears thing or a Cub thing. You know,
what keeps happening if you watch the Cubs games, and I saw this last night. They keep saying the Cubs haven't done this since 1946. They haven't done this since 1931. They haven't done this since 1912. Every day there's more milestones that they haven't done in 80 or 90 or 100 years.
There's only one milestone we're interested in, though.
Winning the World Series.
Yes. Some people are saying that they haven't been in the World Series for 108 years. That's not the case.
Right.
They were in the World Series in 1945. Is that correct? Yeah.
Yeah.
But they lost.
So. Yeah. Yep.
It doesn't count if you don't win the World Series. Nobody remembers. Do you remember who lost the World Series last year? If you do.
No.
No. Kansas City won, but I do not know who lost.
There you go. I think, was it the Mets?
Was it? No, I don't think it was.
Yeah, I think it was
the Mets.
Yeah, I think it was. Because remember, the Mets beat the Cubs to get to the World Series.
Right.
Second place, nobody remembers.
Right. So true. So what do we do to commemorate this, Eric?
Well, a year ago, you wrote a very popular song about...
popular to whom?
It went viral, didn't
it? Won the American Music Award.
Yeah, he won a Grammy.
Yeah, and, it took home a Grammy and an American Music Award.
Can I just say, I thought it was awesome, and it was pretty split down the middle. Half loved it and wanted it more than anything, and half said, oh my God, if you hit that button again, we will come punch you.
I know.
Well, it's been a year, so maybe can we hear a little bit of this song that you wrote for Jake Arrieta?
Do we have a little bit of it, Joey?
Do we have
just
time?
A little. Don't play
the whole thing.
But
you know, you
just have to shave
get
again.
A flavor for it.
All right, just a little bit of it, maybe.
Oh, Arrieta, Jacob Arrieta, Arrieta. He's my favorite Cub. Almost pitched a perfect game. Destined for the Hall of Fame. Freeze the frame. Shout his name. Perfect game. Hall of Fame. Oh, Arrieta, Jacob Arrieta, Arrieta. He's my favorite Cub. Doesn't give up many hits, enjoys a hot dog and some Schlitz. Many hits, have a Schlitz, perfect game, Hall of Fame. Oh, Arrieta, Jacob Arrieta, Arrieta, he's my favorite Cub. Give him his Cy Young Award, Martin Milner, Kent McCord, Young Award, Kent McCord. Many hits,
all right,
have
you
a
no, don't stop
game.
It.
Hall
I love
fame.
This thing.
Oh, Arrieta, Jacob Arrieta, Arrieta, he's my favorite Cub. Loves to pitch at Wrigley Field. Once hurt his arm, but now it's healed. Wrigley Field, now it's healed. Young Award, Kent McCord. Many hits, have a Schlitz. Perfect game, Hall of Fame. Oh, Arrieta, Jacob Arrieta, Arrieta. He's my favorite Cub. Brawny arms and a manly beard. I'd tell you more, but it's getting weird. Manly beard, getting weird. Wrigley Field, now it's healed. Young Award, Kent McCord. Many hits, have a Schlitz. Perfect game, Hall of Fame. Oh, Arrieta, Jacob Arrieta, Arrieta, he's my favorite Cub. Tonight's the night we've waited for. Lock it down and win some more. Waited for, win some more. Manly beard, getting weird. Wrigley Field, now it's healed. Young Award, Kent McCord. Many hits, have a Schlitz. Perfect game, Hall of Fame. Oh, Arrieta, Jacob Arrieta, Arrieta, he's my favorite Cub. Anthony Rizzo has my full respect. Chris Bryant makes me genuflect. Full respect, genuflect. Waiting for, win some more. Manly Beard, getting weird. Wrigley Field, now it's healed. Young Award, Kent McCord. Many hits, have a Schlitz. Perfect game, Hall of Fame. Oh, Arrieta, no one does it better. Arrieta, looks good in a sweater. Arrieta, Greek people give him feta. Arrieta, he's my favorite Cub.
All right, so that
That's
was
awesome, man. So, thank I got to tell you, bro.
That was great. He was having a Cy Young year.
He was.
So let's flash back a week ago. I came in and I said, let's do this song. I want you to reprise your song, and I had written some new verses to it.
Mm-hmm.
And the new verses I wrote were because in his last few starts, he had like a 5.32 ERA.
I know.
There were reports that his velocity was down. He was third in the team in the ERA.
Yeah.
He'd walked 21 in his last six starts. Anyway.
Can I say this? If somebody said at the beginning of the season, the Cubs will have not one but two pitchers that'll be the favorites for the Cy Young Award, everyone in the world would have said, well, Jake Arrieta is one of those two. But it turns out he's not. He's still a great pitcher, but he's not one of the two best this season.
Okay, so I wrote these lyrics to inspire Jake Arrieta.
Oh,
then this was for last week, and then you guys, because this is a news talk station, we have to talk about the news,
right?
Instead of my little joke.
There was a lot going on in the news last Monday.
I know. I'm so bitter about it. But
don't
anyway, so here are the verses that I wrote.
All right.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Arrieta, Jacob Arrieta. Arrieta was our favorite Cub.
Oh.
Once he was the Cub staff ace. Now we know that's not the case.
Oh.
Cub staff ace, not the case. Oh, Arrieta.
We should get Mary Schmeichen to sing with Arrieta.
Yeah, Arrieta
was our favorite Cub. His new troubles with control threaten our World Series goal. Bad control, series goal. Cub staff ace, not the case. Oh, Arrieta, Jacob Arrieta. Arrieta was our favorite Cub. Was our hero for a while. Now we are in love with Kyle. For a while, love that Kyle. Bad control, series goal. Cub staff ace, not the case. Oh, Arrieta, Jacob Arrieta. Arrieta was our favorite Cub.
Oh.
He'll return to number one when we're sure he'll get her done. Number one, get her done. For a while, love that Kyle. Bad control, series goal. Cub staff ace, not the case. Oh, Arrieta, Jacob Arrieta. Arrieta was our favorite Cub. So he goes out on Friday.
Very nice,
by the way. He strikes out 10 seven innings.
Yes.
Gives up just five hits.
Right.
He now has the most wins. He's tied for the most wins in the National League. And so here's the last verse.
All right.
Now he's gone and done me wrong, pitched real well and spoiled my song. Done me wrong, spoiled my song. Number one, get her done for a while. Love that, Kyle. Bad control, series goal. Cub staff ace, not the case. Arrieta, Jacob Arrieta. Arrieta may still be our favorite.
Oh, it ended well.
So
it ended happy.
I was like thinking this was, so I've been telling people, well, I wrote this song and maybe he heard about it, but
yeah.
I don't know how he would have because I only told like two people. Right? He says, I'm going to show him. I'm going to pitch real well. So anyway. So we'll keep this in our back pocket.
Just
in case.
Although somebody said we have jinxed the Cubs win now because we played the song.
Oh, I hope not.
I
can't imagine.
I love you, Bill. I don't think you have that much power.
I don't think so either. I can't imagine that being the case.
I think he does. Can we talk about the debate when we come back?
Yeah,
let's
do that. We'll
I'm
take
scared.
A break. Tonight is debate number one. There will be three presidential debates. There will be one vice presidential debate. But tonight is the one that Lester Holt is anchoring. So we'll discuss that next. Stick around. It's Bill. It's Wendy. It's the Weird Al Yankovic convention. We're all writing funny song parodies. It's WGN. Tonight is the first of the debates between your presidential candidates. Eric Zorn is our guest, by the way. You can get coverage starting at 8 o'clock tonight with Steve McMichael and Ed Obradovich. They'll be covering the debates.
Oh, God.
I tell you. Yeah, it should be interesting tonight, right?
Yeah, it should be really interesting to see what happens. I've written that I think that the bar that Donald Trump has to clear here is that he has to look plausibly presidential.
He can do it if he wants to. I've seen him do it.
I don't think it's going to be all that hard for him to do it. I don't know that for 90 minutes he's going to be able to keep his temper under control. I mean, you have to be able to see him and imagine him in the Oval Office during a time of international crisis or a time of domestic crisis. And he has to be calm. He has to be measured. He has to speak the truth. I mean, Hillary Clinton passes all those tests. I mean, Hillary Clinton is she's like the smartest kid in the class. She's nerdy. She knows, mm-hmm. she knows all that stuff. Set aside some of the problems that she's had, some of her ethical problems and so on. There's no question that she's kind of got those kind of chops, right? If you had to choose between the two of them right now, who's going to be in the room when things are going crazy in the Middle East or things are going crazy with the economy, you want someone with a real level head, I think, like Hillary Clinton. The threshold that he's got to clear is, can he stand up there? And there are a lot of people who are Republican or voted Republican in the past who are not sure they can cast a vote for a guy who seems so unpresidential. If he can impress them as presidential in 90 minutes, which shouldn't be all that hard to do for most people anyway, then he's cleared the bar that he needs to clear. Hillary Clinton's big problem, if you look at the polls, is people find her less honest and trustworthy than they find Trump.
Interesting.
Which is just confusing to me.
It is confusing because when you look at the comprehensive nature of Trump's lies and the volume of them and everything, he is demonstrably less honest than she is. He tells whoppers all the time. Just this weekend he came out and said, oh, the debate moderator, Lester Holt, he's a Democrat. Well, he's a registered Republican. He just says things.
But that gets his point across, and people who are supporting him, whether it's right or wrong, who fact checks anymore?
Well, the fact checking is the easiest, is the most interesting thing.
But no
thing
one does it.
Because there was a debate about the debate as to whether or not Lester Holt should be using fact checks during the debate. And Trump's side said, absolutely not. We don't want that in the debate. And Hillary Clinton's side said, yeah, I think that should be part of the debate.
You know, I've heard Hillary Clinton's team on this, and what they've said is, well, because obviously the answer to that is, well, Lester Holt should turn to Hillary Clinton and say, Donald Trump just said that he was always opposed to the war in Iraq. Just, Mrs. Clinton, what do you think?
And so give
her a chance to fact check. And they're saying, well, we don't want her to spend all her time fact checking him. I don't think that you want your moderator playing the role of fact checker in a case like this. I think that these candidates are perfectly capable of fact checking each other. After the debate, there'll be plenty of fact checks out there. I just don't think that the moderator should be in a position, because then he's going to have to referee every claim.
You're right, Eric.
So I don't think that's – anyway, I want to –
But doesn't it give you carte blanche to just say – I mean, if we're accusing one or both candidates of lying – doesn't it give them carte blanche to just lie as often as they possibly can for 90 minutes?
Well, it's up to the other candidate to call them on it, right? I mean, that's yes. I mean, Donald Trump could just make stuff up the whole time.
Yeah.
But then she's got to call him on it, and afterwards the people who write about it and analyze it will call him on it, and maybe that'll – I mean, not that anything like that has seemed to have harmed him in the past. Hillary Clinton's – the bar that she has to clear is that people don't find her honest and trustworthy, and I don't know how you change that impression – on the part of people. I mean, Trump has like a 10 percentage point lead in that area, which is, again, as Wendy said, it's stunning.
Mm-hmm.
But how do you do – you can't really do that in an hour. You can say – you can speak complete truth for 90 minutes. You can say – everything you can say can be completely accurate. That doesn't mean that people are going to find you honest and trustworthy. They're still going to go, oh, what about Benghazi? What about Whitewater?
The right. Catchphrases that always come up.
What about Vince Foster? She murdered Vince Foster.
Right.
So all these things – you know, and her emails obviously is an important element of that. You can't repair that kind of PR damage in 90 minutes, whereas I think Trump is going to have an easier time repairing the damage that he has. He is, when you look at the temperament question, and that's basically where you see this in the polls, is that Hillary Clinton has a substantial lead over Trump in this, does this person have the temperament to be president? And I think it's a very, very important bar. I think you want someone who's in the Oval Office because they have to make really important decisions very quickly.
Constantly. Yeah.
I mean, the fate of the nation, the fate of the planet can hang in the balance. If you've got something that's, World War III is about to happen or whatever, you've got to have someone who's really steady under pressure and isn't going to be taking action because he's mad at somebody or someone has yanked his chain. Just this incident over the weekend, right, where he the Democrats are going to invite Mark Cuban, the billionaire.
And Jennifer Flowers.
And then so he tweets back, I'm going to invite Jennifer Flowers.
Mm-hmm.
And Jennifer Flowers, of course, was Bill Clinton's mistress many, mm-hmm. many years ago. It's like Mark Cuban is a contemporary critic of Trump's. I don't know why the Clinton campaign thought that would be a good idea to put him in the front row. But the difference between that and bringing in your
a circus.
Yeah. It's just terrible judgment.
All right. So, here's a question about
that. They're not going to do it, by the way.
Let's say – all right. It's not going to happen. So let's say it did happen, or let's say – because he's pushed for the fact that Jennifer Flowers should be there and he might want to take the attack on Bill Clinton's affairs – he himself has admitted to the fact that he's had affairs of his own, Donald Trump.
Is Bill Clinton running for president?
He is not running for president. All right. But if he's trying to establish that there's problems with the Clintons' marriage, look at his own marriages. He's had problems himself. How could he pull that out as a possible weak spot if he's had that
same
weak spot?
They should bring Marla Maples and Ivana Trump, right? And put them in the front row, too. Yeah. But I think all that stuff is really irrelevant to the presidency. I mean, it is interesting to me, though, that the evangelical vote seems to be strongly behind Trump, given the morality of his past. I mean, I'm not talking about divorce being immoral, but he's admitted to all kinds of affairs and the kind of things that he talks about.
Not just admitted, bragged almost.
Yeah. So it's a very interesting.
I'm sick to my stomach, and I can't wait to watch it, but I'm very nervous about it.
Yeah, I mean, I think what we're going to be looking for here is whether Trump can control himself and whether he is able to be calm. I mean, if you remember when he was down in Mexico, and he gave
the first time he ever sounded presidential to me.
Very sober, very calm, very measured. You know, in these debates, he's been in debates before, and in every debate, he's been he's calling names and he's really been out there. But that appealed to his base supporters. That's how he got where he got in the Republican primary race.
And there were more people then. Now with it being one-on-one, doesn't he have to mind his manners a little more?
Yeah, I mean, if you remember, one of the terrible things was when he had accused Carly Fiorina of being too ugly to be president.
Oh, my God. Right.
And she called him on that in debate, and that was a bad moment for him in those debates. So I think that if you are going to be able to confront him with some of the things that he's said, if he keeps his cool, or if he does what a lot of politicians are able to do, which is like take a question that's really difficult to answer and just pivot away from it and answer the question that you wish had been asked, that's a political skill. He's not really shown that he can do that. And someone will say like, "Hey, Trump University was really bad." He will engage that question rather than say, "Well, Trump University shows that there are a lot of people out there who really want a job, and I'm going to get them jobs." I mean, that's the kind of thing that a skilled debater and politician does.
If you're Hillary Clinton, don't you try to find the Aleppo moments? Don't you try to find the things that, because she has been so engulfed in politics and has to know this stuff, and he probably doesn't, don't you try to find those and use those against him tonight?
Absolutely you do. I mean, I think that's what they're going to be hoping to nail him on specifics. And they can't be like gotcha questions, right? They have to be questions that are, I mean, Aleppo is not a gotcha question. I mean, it might be that there are some small towns in Syria. That would be a gotcha question. Aleppo is, of course, this center of this humanitarian crisis that we're facing and no one knows what to do about. But, so they are going to be looking for just that sort of moment with him, or with just to try to exhibit that he doesn't have the knowledge to be president. And I think there is not. You can't say, he'll surround himself with people who have that knowledge. You've got to have that knowledge yourself.
And she has to be careful about being too defensive. And I imagine it would be difficult if you have somebody saying something about you. It's hard not to get defensive, but she has to watch that.
Yeah, she's a pretty good debater, but she's not a great debater.
And she was good with Zach Galifianakis, Between the Ferns. If you haven't seen that, listeners, call it up on the old internet, as Bill would say.
It's
going to be really awesome.
It's going to be interesting how she looks, whether she looks healthy. I mean, there's all this talk out there that she's not, but I think she will be. I think she will. But I think she'll be able to stand up there for 90 minutes and go toe to toe with them. So.
And if she coughs, big deal. People cough. There is allergy season going on. Yeah. Everybody, that's another bad thing. Somebody put together a video. Here are the worst moments and why you shouldn't vote for Hillary. And every time she coughed, I'm like, really?
She should have on her podium. She should have a dozen different kind of medications up there and just keep spraying
all
them.
The pill bottles. Yeah,
the Smith brothers or Pine brothers should just come with her.
Right.
And a little ice bag on her head.
Needless to say, we'll all be watching tonight.
Yes, I watching hope that, I think a number of the Tribune columnists, including me, are going to have some debate react online.
Excellent.
Probably right around midnight.
Excellent. Eric, thanks very much. That's Eric Zorin. Read him in your Chicago Tribune. We'll find out what Steve Bertrand has next on the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Steve Bertrand's here.
He's right there.
Yes, Steve. The Christie's has a big baseball auction coming up next month. And there are three cities where they're bringing some of the memorabilia, and Chicago is one of them. So we're going to talk to an expert from Christie's about what's in town.
Excellent.
You can see it today and tomorrow, I think, at a Marriott on Adams. So that's coming up. The Inno boys are just around the corner, and Scott Kleinberg is going to talk about tonight's debate and the millennials, all coming up on the Business Lunch.
Who's guest hosting with the Who?
I don't know. I'm hearing Teenage Wasteland, but I'm also hearing audio. I think Adam Hoge is out to get all of us, not
it's
just
Adam
Kim.
Hoge.
Adam Hoge is
really?
Trying to ruin our show.
He's so mad the Bears lost, he's just sabotaging everything.
He's lost his marbles.
Maybe he is the real Baba O'Reilly. Maybe that's his real name.
That would explain a lot, wouldn't it? Hi, everybody. It's Phil Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. Part two of our Monday show. How do you join in? Well, you can just listen, and there's nothing wrong with that. Or if you want to talk to us or text us, 312-981-7200. You know what I'm finding very interesting today is anybody who's talking about tonight's upcoming debate also mentions how nervous or queasy they are. Are you noticing that?
I'm feeling that.
Are you feeling it too?
Listen, I don't like where the country is right now, and I don't know what the future brings. And really, vote for whom you want. I can't say anything else.
Do you agree with me that, because other people have said that, the country is in a shambles, the country is in disarray. We have a violence problem, a serious violence problem, but aside from that, most other things are going pretty well, aren't they?
I don't know. I just feel like no one has respect for anyone anymore.
There's something to
that.
I
mean, it's like okay to be a jerk.
Sure.
I mean, I thought we spent our founding fathers, you know, the golden rule, treat others as you would like to be treated. I thought we did that for a while.
Yeah, for a little while we tried it, but now we're on to other things. Now we're on to it's all me. That's what it's become a little bit. But mostly, because other people have said that, but this country, this used to be a great country. This is the best. There's no country even close to this country. The violence is out of hand. There's no doubt about it.
But as I was just, during our lunch break, I was out talking to Rick Hogan out in front of the building. And
yes.
He said, did you hear about this shooting right on Michigan and Monroe? And I said, no. A man was shot critically injured Saturday night following a dispute just outside Millennium Park. 54-year-old man shot in the head about 7:35 at the northeast corner of Michigan and Monroe.
Hmm.
After a dispute with a man who then fled on a bicycle. A person of interest was being questioned after being caught nearby. A woman who identified the victim as her brother said she and her brother and at least one other person had left a wine tasting, and they were walking to a train station when they were accosted by a group and a man began fighting with her brother on the sidewalk near Millennium Park. I cannot stand to see fights.
Mm-hmm.
I really can't. And it just makes me sick to my stomach.
Mm-hmm.
And then this fight escalated. Police said the victim was walking with two women, got into a dispute with another man. The fight turned physical. And then the other man just shot the victim in the head and then fled on a bicycle.
So much of this is uncharacteristic of your normal shooting. A wine tasting, somebody fleeing by way of bicycle.
I know. And so Rick Hogan and I were talking about it, and it's like, there are too many guns. That is the bottom line. But how do you take any guns away?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't it too late?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we're doomed?
I hope we're not doomed. And I'm sure we'll all see new hope tonight as we enjoy the presidential debate.
That's why I'm sick to my stomach. I'm
not
crazy
the only one.
About either candidate.
Everyone today that I'm talking, are you going to watch the debate tonight? I'm going to watch it, but my stomach already hurts. I'm already in pain. I have a question about tonight's debates, and I know that it's a silly question, but I need to ask. Last night, the Cubs game was on ESPN, and they were touting Monday Night Football, which will be on tonight on ESPN, and they were saying, and it's for people who want to watch the game and the debates at the same time, but no further explanation beyond that. Are they going to split screen it? Are you going to be able to watch the football game and the debates on one screen?
Well,
is that what they're doing?
How can you focus on
one? You can't.
One.
Which will be more violent, do you think?
The debate.
The debate, absolutely. By far, not even close. Not even close. More hard hits, more illegal blocks at the debate.
I don't like, if you're supporting Trump, that's your business. I am not supporting Trump. I'll say that now.
Mm-hmm.
Not 100% sure that I like the other candidate either.
Mm-hmm.
And not sure I want to go independent, but if someone that I talk to, whether on the air or off the air, likes Trump, it's just, you got to go Trump or you're an idiot.
Yeah.
No, I'm really not.
Yeah.
And why does it have to be? Why, if you want me to vote for Trump, why wouldn't you take your time and say, Wendy, here's what we need to talk about. But no, it's just like, oh, you're not voting for Trump. You're an idiot.
Right.
No.
Right.
It doesn't work that way.
But that's how it is now presented. Is everybody's right, you're always wrong.
No,
that's
but
just how it is now.
I don't like it.
But you have to. That's how it is now. If anyone's opinion is different from your own, someone's an idiot.
I know that happened with a few people back years ago.
But now
it's everybody.
Right.
I mean, don't you try to have a conversation and you're not going to change someone's mind, but maybe say, well, here's what I think.
Can I tell you, and I know I've mentioned this before, I remember so many nights as a child, my parents would have a bunch of people over, 4 people, 6 people, 8 people, and they were of different political minds. And sometimes at dinner or sometimes after dinner, they would talk about politics. That was one of the topics. And despite the fact that everybody, not everybody, but some people disagreed with other people, nobody was angry. There was no name calling. They would go back and forth over as to whether their particular candidate was
when
the better.
When was this?
When I was growing up. I can't tell you how many nights I remember sitting at tables or listening from upstairs as they would go back and forth. It never got out of hand.
Well, look just at how this debate, and all of it, really through all of it, is being marketed. I mean, you see these...
Like a prize fight.
Like a prize fight. And that's so discouraging to me, you know, that it's more about who's going to land a punch rather than who's going to, you know, make arguments or have valid points.
Right.
But, you know, just the pictures they're choosing of the candidates and all of that. It's just
the theme song.
So
I'm going to knock you out.
Right.
That's what it is.
Well, they're treating this as a joke, which I sometimes think it is. This is just a big prank, isn't it? Come on. Where's Ashton Kutcher?
It shouldn't be.
It is not a joke. Some people might treat it as if it's funny.
It's not.
But it's not a joke.
Rich, how are you feeling about tonight's debate?
Well, I kind of feel the same way you do, namely a bit nauseated at both candidates because, and I'm using a line from Mr. Cochran, but I agree with him on this. With all the baggage, all the scandals, all the lies, Hillary Clinton is the least fit, not qualified, but least fit person to become president. But the only person he could see less fit than Hillary Clinton is, of course, Donald Trump. And that's who we have. We don't have and maybe better. We have basically bad and worse. And even in our local elections, watch your TV. I've seen commercials that basically say how horrible this person is. But yet the candidate running that ad, their name isn't even on the ad until you see the fine print at the bottom. It's like, don't tell me how bad the other guy is. Tell me how good you are. Tell me what you're going to do for me. Because if the only thing you have, if the only reason I should vote for you is because the other guy's a horrible person, then your ad tells me nothing.
Well, the way you described it is...
I add that way.
But Rich, the way you described it is the ideal way. Instead of knocking down the other person... Sell yourself. Tell us why you should be the candidate without any doubt. I don't know why it's such a hate fest. I don't get it. It's such a turnoff to hear that, but that's all you hear now.
Yep, I know.
All right, Rich, thank you.
Thanks.
Appreciate
all right, pick
it.
Up some Pepto-Bismol or Maalox before the debate
that's,
tonight.
If you buy stock, that's your move today. That's going to go through the roof in the next few hours. All right. I know there's a lot of people who want to talk to us about this, and we are anxious to hear from you. We're at 312-981-7200. We'll get those calls and texts next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. All right. We're talking a multitude of topics, most of them about tonight's debate, where people seem to, whether they're watching it or not, seems to be the consensus that people are dizzy.
That would be a good thing.
Yeah, everyone's dizzy.
That's a good way to describe it. Mary, are you dizzy?
No, I'm fearful for this country because, you know, I'm not, of course, Trump is not wonderful, that's for darn sure, and he can be ignorant at times, but I don't trust Hillary as far as I could see her. She lies right into the camera. She's been lying for years, and I'm afraid of her communist leanings. When she was in college, she was a fan of all Saul Alinsky. I don't know if you know who he is, but he's a big America hater. And she is of that ilk.
You don't think she hates America, do you?
I think she's communist leaning. And
who's friends with Putin?
Say, I vote my pocketbook. And you think gas prices? She hates gas. She hates fracking. She hates fossil fuel. Our gas prices will skyrocket. You're going to be paying $6 a gallon if she gets in. Plus, she loves to tie up, you know, all these regulations. We're going to have regulations coming of our coming out of who knows where. But and also as far as like the health issue, our health insurance, she is for, you know, the Obamacare in steroids. And if we get that,
wait, steroids?
Your
why do
insurance
you...
premiums
that's not
are
covered.
Go through the roof.
Steroids aren't covered.
No,
in
steroids
Obamacare.
Are not covered. Why? I'm confused on a couple of things. Number one, I don't think we'll see gas prices at $6 anytime soon. I can't imagine a scenario where gas prices would more than double. And explain the steroids thing to me, because I'm confused about the steroids.
I'm talking about Obamacare. She is the one that instituted the health care, more socialistic type of health care. And the thing is, if you communism, look at Venezuela, what's happening over there. Those people are digging for garbage to eat. And that's because of wonderful communism. She is in that.
Mary, she's not pro. She's not pro communism. You don't think that, do you?
Socialism.
Well, but there.
Which is one step away.
There's a
it's
huge
a big
difference.
Step.
There's a huge difference between the two. But she couldn't have fooled so many people for so many years if she's heading us toward communism.
Why would she want to?
Because that's what she was brought up with in her college years. She was in, that's where her leanings were. And not only that, I mean, do you want communism here? Do you want high prices for everything? She's going to drive up the prices. And she's, see, how
well, actually with communism,
prices would go down.
Yeah.
Actually, with communism, things cost much less. There just aren't many of them.
Mary, I just want to.
Are you kidding me, mister? You got to be kidding me.
Mary, I want to ask you something. Where are you getting this information? Has somebody given you this information?
Where?
Yes.
Read the paper. I read a lot of periodicals. I listen to.
But who said that she was trying to get us
Fox,
to?
Fox. All of them.
Well,
Fox.
But it was it Fox that said that she's trying to bring us
Did
more toward communism?
Did you ever hear of Mike Savage?
Yeah, of course.
Ugh.
Well, did you ever listen to him?
Yes.
And what do you think?
I get a headache.
Yeah. He is.
You think he's lying about her?
I do.
Yes.
Absolutely. 100%. Yes, I do, Mary.
Why do you think he's lying?
Because he is.
How do you know?
Because you do your research.
Because why?
Because you listen to what somebody says. That's why I won't tell anybody what to vote for or who to vote for, because you have to figure out on your own who you're going to vote for.
Well,
I could just say things right now, and if I say it on the radio, doesn't mean it's true. Mike Savage.
No, but you
wow.
think he'd get a lawsuit thrown against him if all those things were false.
Well, you could say it was his opinion. There are ways around it. I just be careful what you listen to.
Well, I listen to all sides, and the side that makes sense to me is the one that I'm going to conclude that I'm for.
All right. All right.
Right?
Well, yeah.
Well, you're going to watch
See,
the debate,
I think
right?
Don't listen to the other side.
But Mary, can I tell you the difference between
they don't.
The? But here's She's the difference between what we're trying to do and what Mike Savage is trying to do. If you listen to him with any regularity, you've probably noticed he tends to get a little fired up and angry and yell at people a lot, doesn't he? On a nightly basis.
I get fired up when I think of our company. Our country going down the drain.
I know, but he's trying to. But he's trying to sell you on.
Down the drain.
But he's trying to.
It saddens me. It makes me. These guys are putting their lives on the line for what? For these phonies.
And you think Donald Trump is going to be the plumber and pull it out from going down the drain?
I say give him a chance rather than know where she's going, which is the wrong way. My God, don't you people fear communism?
We fear communism, but there's
a huge.
Yeah, but there's a huge stretch, Whoa. Stretch between communism and what Hillary Clinton would bring to the country. That she couldn't. It's impossible. She's not the face of communism. Believe me, please believe me.
Well, I don't know. I would take my chance with Trump because at least it's a chance, whereas I know where Hillary is headed.
Communism.
And I don't like the picture.
All right.
Well, Mary, thank you very much. You're going to watch the debate tonight, I assume?
Oh, of course. Of course.
All right. Well, good luck.
I just cry for our country. I really I'm brokenhearted over it. And do you say, why do people get so excited? Well, for crying out loud, it's what do you think our life's going to be like 10, 20 years from now?
I hope
your
better
kids.
Than this
think about
right
your
now.
Kids.
That's All what right. that's what I'm doing. Thank
Thanks,
you
Mary.
Very
Watch
much,
the debate.
Mary.
I'm watching it at Joseph Stalin's house. Are you going to come by? He's got.
I hear he throws a great party.
It's the Communist Party. It's the best.
Oh, my God.
All right. We'll take a quick break.
I cannot. I can't unhear this.
I know. A quick break. Steve at the news. Then more show. Want to jump in? We invite you to.
Yes.
312-981.
The water's not warm.
The water's very cold. Freezing on the side
and
of the pool.
It's red.
312-981-7200. Bill and Wendy on WGN. Welcome back, comrades.
I am scared. I am physically and emotionally
Don't be scared.
Scared.
Everything's going
to
be okay.
All right. We would like to continue talking about this because this is what everybody's talking about right now. The debate is happening tonight.
Yep.
I have to tape it because I have a talent show I have to go to. I'm not in it.
Are you in a talent show tonight?
No, my son is.
All right.
But I'm taping it and I'm watching it and I'm sure everyone else who is calling us.
When you say taping it, are you watching? Is this the Reagan-Mondale debate or which one are you taping?
I'm DVRing it, whatever. 312-981-7200. I'm fearful.
Don't be afraid.
News time right now. Oh my God, I'm sounding like Ro. What has happened to me?
What's happened to Ro?
Oh, there's no help for him.
What's
Thanks,
wrong?
Steve. No, nothing. The Bates. The Bates. The Bates are tonight.
Yes.
The D Bates.
Yes.
Rated D.
708 texts us that tonight's debate and the election itself is kind of like choosing between Blatt's and Drury's beer. I don't know if that's a shot against our candidates or against poor beer or both. Could be both.
I don't know who's who because there have been times that Blatt's has been on sale and you know, at college.
Oh, all right.
Blatt's and chili parties.
Yeah. Yep.
I don't know, Bill, but hopefully everybody will watch the debate tonight. I am truly nervous about it because I don't know what to expect. I would like to see them talk about issues and not fight.
I would love to see that. Do you think that's what's on the program?
No. I think it's going to be finger pointing, name calling, and blood pressures rising by both the candidates and the viewers.
Right. I wonder if anyone will truly be swayed by what goes on tonight or at any of the debates. Don't you think most people go in kind of already knowing who it'll be? And unless they somehow 100% drop the ball, hi Bears fans, I wonder if it could truly, if anyone can truly be swayed.
I don't know. Kathy, what do you think? Debate nights, you watching?
Okay, I'm going to say ever since the beginning, Donald Trump has been very honest. He said, this is who I am. I'm not going to change. So why are people waiting for him to change? When you have a surrogates or commentators on TV, it all depends on who shows up, which Donald shows up tonight. This is called a split personality. I mean, if you go from one to the other, and basically, this isn't healthy. This is a mental health issue. I mean, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde was two people. Nice to his patients, but not out on the streets. I don't understand what we're waiting for. You know what I mean?
Right.
It depends on who shows up. I assume Donald Trump. How many are there? Back? I don't know. I'm scared, too.
Well, because, when you mentioned that, you know, he just says, "This is I'm not going to apologize. This is how I roll. This is how I'm doing it." When you think back of some of the terrible things he said, Carly Fiorina saying she was not attractive.
I only missed one debate. I hit every one. So that's why I've heard the diarrhea that's come out of his mouth, and I don't think others have. The things he said to other people, I thought he was like a 15-year-old mouthy teenager.
Yeah.
He's a 10-year-old bully. Name call. We don't. Do you ever call names? I mean, maybe if you're. I don't know, but not often.
Right.
But to actually get on TV and to think it's appropriate, and then to have the nerve. He was. What was it with that family, the Gold Star family? They viciously attacked him. They verbally argued with him. And basically, he goes calling names, and yet someone holds him to the point. He doesn't know he's not well.
It's so funny because once people started to question his capacity, his mental capacity, that's when he turned on Hillary Clinton's health And all of a sudden, he was deflecting it like, hey, you think I'm not healthy? How about that woman?
He deflected everything. Like I said, I've watched all but one. He really got through. Everything was, they'd ask him a question, he would say two words, and then turn it on another person. There wasn't much that came out, so I can't imagine that a lot of people that are behind him actually listened to him. The name calling, the way he was like, I said, a 10-year-old.
Right.
And this is who you want. I don't understand.
Well, that's what I don't understand either. And I know people want to change and they're not happy with how this country is going.
Oh, we want a better change, though. Not as scary.
No, I agree with you. That's what I mean. It's like, I don't know. Are people like just saying, well, he's not a guy that I would invite over to my house, but he can change things.
Oh, he can come to my house. He's rich. Bring the food. Not the president. Not to make decisions. He makes poor decisions on little things. I don't understand.
Kathy,
and
thank you.
When you think back to, I'm just going to say, do you remember back when one of the, they were still voting, and I think it was Kasich and Cruz were still in.
Yeah.
Do you remember there were over 200,000 people that got off a couch and voted for them? They weren't even in the race. And yet people actually made the time and the effort to go up and vote for, and these are Republicans, to vote for people who weren't even in. Okay.
All right. Well, you watch tonight, okay?
Thanks, Kathy.
Thanks.
Thank you, Kathy.
Doesn't like Trump, but says, you're welcome to my house. Bring the food. I like that.
I like her.
Yeah.
All right, Ann. Ann, she's at a drive-thru right now.
Oh.
Ann, what's for lunch?
Hi, how you doing?
There you are.
Good, how you doing?
Hi, Ann. What's up?
I wish I was at a drive-thru. No, but not really. I want to give you my opinion.
Sure.
And first of all, Trump, he talks out of both sides of his mouth. Two, Hillary, you only have about a half a chance. Three, the main reason I'm calling is because who actually really runs our country is the House Congress, the Democrats and the Republicans, because they can overveto any bill or anything that the president wants. They have that right, and they could do that. And we need to get new senators in there. It doesn't matter if you're Republican, you're Democrat, or whatever the case may be. We need senators that are in there that actually will work for the people and not against the people.
It sounds good. How do we do it?
People have to vote.
Sure. Except anytime you say, so many people make that general statement, hey, just get out there and vote. But a lot of those people are going to vote for the wrong people.
In your opinion.
In my opinion.
Right, but the idea is we need to clean up the House of Representatives and get new senators in there with fresh ideas that actually will work for the people.
I like it. All right.
It sounds pretty good. Thank you, Ann.
Thanks, Ann.
Thank you.
We need to clean up the House. I'm going to call Kula's Maids right now, see if they can come by on Friday.
Who?
Kula's Maids.
That's a place?
Yeah. I see their cars all the time.
Mike?
Yes.
Talk to us.
What do you think, Mike?
What if in the middle of this debate, Hillary gets caught up in a coughing jag?
Who cares? Why does this bother people?
But is she sick? Is she got something they're not divulging?
No.
That's the question.
When you have a cold or pneumonia that she has, you have a little tickle in your throat. Allergy season is around. And when you get that little dry thing, Bill, you've seen me have to walk into the producer's booth.
That's why I'm not voting for you. I don't think you'll make it through the 4 years.
But I can't stand when people bring up that she's coughing. She's not dying, and she has a cough. Big deal.
I have never collapsed from a cough.
Well, have you had walking pneumonia?
She did have pneumonia, though. Yeah,
have you
did.
Ever worn a pantsuit at a 9/11 commemoration?
No, sir.
Not comfortable.
Okay, there's a lot of things you don't have in common.
Polyester can take you down in a second.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, Mike.
It's such a grueling schedule, and once you get up into your late 60s, early 70s, the fact that those are 19-hour work days, 5 or 6 days a week, I don't know how anybody survives that.
Remember our last two callers ago, she said we have to clean up the House of Representatives?
Yes.
Denise might have a way to do it.
All right.
Love talking to these listeners. And we are talking. We're not yelling.
Which is much appreciated. my suggestion for cleaning up the House is that we get rid of the Citizens United decision to a constitutional amendment. And that it'll be cleaned up immediately.
Explain this, because you're just throwing words out that I'm not understanding right now, Denise.
Remember the Citizens United decision by the Supreme Court that said that anybody could contribute as much as they wanted to any political candidate?
Yeah.
Okay.
Corporations were people. If that were to be reversed by constitutional amendment, you could not go back. You couldn't change it anymore. And that would clean up the House and the Senate instantly. They wouldn't be able to take donations.
All right. I understand it a little bit better. I'm trying to think if it would definitely clean up the House, though. It would certainly limit the amount that they could spend, but would that clean it up?
Well, they would limit the amount of donations they could take from corporations.
Right.
Which.
So they wouldn't be in the pocket of big business, is what you're saying.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah, that's a start. I think that'd be a tremendous start.
I think it would be a tremendous start.
Except who votes on that? Don't the politicians themselves vote on that?
On constitutional amendments?
Yeah.
Yeah, usually that you have to get it through the legislature of each state. And I think the legislature of the states is at least a little bit more accessible than the U.S. Senate or the Congress.
It's like when they vote themselves raises. Like, who in their right mind wouldn't vote themselves a raise? Everybody would, right? They shouldn't have that power. It should be somebody else who dictates their raises. But they've fixed it so that they're the ones who decide when they get raises and for how much.
Yeah.
It's not fair. All right. Well, it's a great idea. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Have a good day.
I still don't understand.
Still don't?
Should we take a break?
Are you still afraid?
I'm going to puke.
Are you really? Are you sick?
I will watch tonight, mm-hmm. and I will watch in wonderment.
All right.
Can we take a quick break and then more people want to talk about
this? Yes. Please give us a call or a text. We'll be happy to talk to you. We're at 312-981-7200. We're talking about tonight's debate.
Are people drinking while they listen to our show?
Some people are.
Right. Yep. I just wasn't sure.
Some people are.
All right.
All right. We'll be back after this. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. The debates are tonight. The first debate is tonight. Then we'll do a vice presidential debate and then a couple more presidential debates. And by then, we'll all be seasick.
Did you put a quarter in the...
the Calliope.
I thought it was the player piano.
At Shakey's Pizza. Thanks to Shakey's Pizza for providing us with that beautiful player piano music. Tonight we'll all watch the debates. And then what?
I don't have any idea. Hi, Robert. How's it going? You cleared your throat. You're all ready to roll, so talk to us.
I am extremely scared. I want you both to hold me now.
All right. Move close to your radio.
I just can't believe these comments. Most people are lazy or uneducated or just plain dumb. You need to find that information not from a radio personality or the internet, but seek out the information from a source that's credible, not someone's opinion about what Hillary did or what Trump did. Look at the facts.
Right, right.
And then make your judgment based upon that.
It doesn't seem difficult, does it?
No, and Hillary's been a public servant for 30 years. She's been a proponent for many positive results in this country. And look at Trump's record. He's strictly... as you can see, all the mistakes he's made and all the lies he's committed, it's obvious who's the better candidate. And if you're going to vote, great. But if you're going to vote for Trump, you know, look at the facts, and that should give you a clear direction where our country should be going.
Robert, thank you.
You're welcome.
There's no place for that level-headedness on this show. We must put a stop to that. I think Robert was referring to the fact, not just us, but we had a caller earlier talking about Michael Savage, who's on another station. And, you know, Michael's in the business.
To rile you up.
Sadly, there's a niche in radio of very angry political talk, and he's a practitioner of that. And for what it's worth, his bread and butter is getting people riled up and afraid. That's what he's serving up on a daily basis, is making you afraid that if you don't believe his ways, that the country is going, as the kids like to say, to hell in a handbasket. Not that way.
No, it isn't. And you know, fuel the monster is what is happening.
Sure.
Because everybody's afraid. But, boy.
I wish I knew who said this, because this is the greatest quote of all time, and I wish so badly, and I guess I could look it up, if only there was some sort of a box, an electric box where you could look things up. But somebody said once that anyone who wants to be the president of the United States should be disqualified immediately. That's the last person you want to be the president, is somebody who wants the job. There's something to that.
All right. This might be it, Bill, because I don't know where to go anymore. All right. Hey, Louie.
Hi, guys. How you doing?
Good. You going to watch the debate tonight?
Yeah. You know, I just got a new blood pressure cuff. It's a real nice one. Measures diastolic, systolic, and my pulse.
Yeah.
I'm willing to take my blood pressure baseline in the beginning every half hour until it's over, and I'll call you back with the results.
All right.
All right. You know, honest to God, will you do that?
Please do that.
If I stay awake that long.
Oh, I don't think it'll be, I don't think it'll be boring at all. Do you? I don't think any part of it will be boring tonight.
I usually have to pass out on the couch around 9. I'm pretty old.
Oh, all
but
right.
I could stick it out just because it's for, you know, political service.
All right.
What's your blood pressure now?
With you guys talking, it's normal.
All right.
23 over 74.
That's not bad.
No, not bad for a guy that's almost 64.
Oh, you're holding up well then.
Oh, well, thank you. Well, I looked it too.
Well, good luck tonight, Louie. All right, take
thank
care.
Thank you very much. We're going to compare and contrast. Now it's 123 over 74.
It'll spike around 9 o'clock, and then he should flatline around 9:30, 9:45.
That's not good. Quick break?
Yeah, let's take a quick break.
And Lester Holt will be moderating it tonight, correct?
Yeah, I'm happy for him because tonight's audience is a gigantic audience. They're anticipating tonight's viewing audience will be just like through the roof. Like this could break
it's up to 2 gazillion right now.
Two gazillion, they're saying, Steve. Wow. 2 gazillion viewers.
Steve Bertrand was saying, and if you do remember, that the second debate, was it you that said the second debate is more exciting?
No, the first debate is usually most viewed, and then the second debate they try to correct the mistakes.
Because Barack Obama did not do very well in the first debate.
He did horrible last time around.
Reagan did not do well in the first debate in 1984, but sucked it to Mondale in the second debate.
Yeah.
I just hope they discuss the issues at hand, and it's just not a bunch of name-calling and finger-pointing, because really, I've heard enough of that, haven't you?
Oh, yeah. Months and months ago. Yeah, but for some reason that's the game that they're playing.
God, it's a game. This isn't a game.
No,
this
it shouldn't
real
be a
life.
Game.
It's not a reality show.
I know.
Are you sure Ashton Kutcher isn't doing some kind of punk thing?
He has anything to do with this. No.
Damn.
All right, a break and then Steve with the news and then more show. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder on WGN. Steve, thanks so much.
Anything going on tonight?
There's that little debate thing going on. Brad Mielke of ABC News joins us right now. He is stationed at Hofstra University, the scene of the crime, as we'll be referring to it tomorrow. Hi, Brad. How are you?
I'm doing well. If it seems like a carnival atmosphere, I should just let you know there is a literal bounce house outside. There are big tents, and that there's a big balloon floating above MSNBC's set. So your idea is correct.
Are you kidding?
He's kidding.
I'm sorry.
There's a bounce house, you guys.
There is?
It's a college campus on a debate day. Of course there's a bounce house.
Did you get the Republican cotton candy or the Democratic caramel corn? Which did you go with, Brad?
You know, I haven't found the eats yet, you guys. That's my next stop. I had to talk to you first.
All right. Now, this is being billed as a kind of
the
a
thriller
joke.
In Manila.
Yeah, I mean, this is crazy.
Well, and you know, people aren't tamping down expectations, especially when it comes to Hillary Clinton's campaign. I mean, Mark Cuban, he's not a member of the campaign, but he's certainly a Clinton ally. He's calling it the humbling at Hofstra. So, I mean, even on the campaign side where they're supposed to be downplaying expectations, you see people like Tim Kaine saying she's going to do very, very well tonight.
I am curious about that. We were talking about this earlier. If they stick to the facts, which reminds us of the whole fact-checking thing, Lester Holt is moderating the debate tonight, this first debate, and it was brought up that fact-checking should happen, and Donald Trump was against it. I have mixed emotions on this. Part of me thinks that is a good way of doing it, so you can cut through the clutter and get to the actual debate at hand, but then again, it shouldn't give the moderator that much power. What are your thoughts? What do we know about the fact-checking?
Yeah, I think that is sort of the critique at the center of this is, you know, if Donald Trump says, no, I'm not Donald Trump, my name is Taylor Swift, is Lester Holt supposed to just go, Hillary Clinton, your response? Or is he supposed to say, no, your name's Donald Trump, what are you talking about? So that is the line that he's going to have to walk, is perhaps looking out for egregious things that everyone knows is not true and pointing them out. Other things, of course, are more nuanced. Remember when Candy Crowley interrupted back 4 years ago? That was whether Obama had called the attack on the Benghazi consulate an act of terror. He had used the word act of terror, but Republicans will tell you it wasn't in relation to that. I mean, how in the weeds are people supposed to get? So that is the line that Lester Holt's going to have to walk. I'm not jealous of him, but the campaigns certainly have very different views over what role he should take.
Did they make a definite determination, Brad, on exactly how much or how little of that he's allowed to do?
The Commission on Presidential Debates really is encouraging him to stay away from that, really. Yeah. They've said as much that, you know, how do you decide what is a big fact and what's a little fact? I think a lot of people in the media would say a fact is a fact. There's no such thing as little or big. But that's sort of what they've told. So they've really come down on the side of Donald Trump in this argument over how active the moderator should be. But, of course, Lester Holt is the only one who knows his questions. He's the only one who knows how he's going to sort of referee this whole thing. And Hillary Clinton's team says it's too much to ask Hillary Clinton to both defend her own point and to, like, argue over the nitty-gritty of each story that Donald Trump is spinning.
I'm just, I have so much anxiety and some terrible malaise in my stomach over tonight's debate. Will they actually answer questions, or will they just be name-calling and pointing fingers at one another? Who knows?
Well, that's the thing, and I think that there's a lot of people who are sort of trying to figure out how to cover a debate in which one candidate has certainly shown sort of a total willingness to ignore the finer policy debates, right? Donald Trump has not always been interested in arguing over, you know, exactly how he's going to pay for something, exactly how he's going to go at ISIS. He's basically said, trust me, or this will get taken care of. So does Hillary Clinton want to simply keep saying, how will you do that, Donald Trump, and give him the microphone more and more often? That's not usually something a politician wants to do. In the meantime, you have Hillary Clinton, who has shown herself very adept at sort of talking around or taking both sides of issues that have to do with her transparency. At one moment, she's saying she's a progressive who can get things done. Another moment, she's arguing for America's role in the world as sort of a military power, which a lot of progressives would say, no, you can't be on both sides of this. So, I think there is an opportunity for both campaigns to sort of just revert to name calling.
Brad, over the weekend, there was talk of Jennifer Flowers attending tonight's debate and sitting in the front row. That's not happening, right?
That is not happening. The Trump campaign says they actually never invited Jennifer Flowers, admitting that Donald Trump was basically just riffing when he said, well, if Mark Cuban's going to sit in the front row, which he is, by the way, he's still coming. And the Clinton campaign confirms that seat's in the front row. But Donald Trump was sort of just coming up with a counterpunch, as his campaign manager put it. We won't actually see very much of the audience, though, since this is not done by one network. It's done by the Commission on Presidential Debates. They are trying to keep the audience as much out of this as they can.
And with Mark Cuban there, will each of the candidates be allowed to present some new product they hope to sell on the open market?
they'll be told that they're garbage or whatever. Mr. Wonderful would probably tell them they are.
Brad Mielke on the line with us, ABC News correspondent. Did you see Hillary Clinton with Zach Galifianakis between the ferns? Brad, did you see it?
I'm sorry, guys. I didn't catch that question.
Oh, no. Did you see Hillary Clinton and Zach Galifianakis between the ferns? Is that what it's called?
Between two ferns.
Yes. Yeah. She did such a great job with that and was not defensive. I know it was a spoof and a joke, but I think that is key to her performance tonight. And it's tough not to get defensive when you feel like you're fighting against a buffoon.
Yeah. Well, and apparently that was her idea, too. And so we've seen Hillary Clinton at times sort of show her more humorous side. The question will be when someone is really not, you know, speaking at you with your best interest. She and Zach Galifianakis were in on the joke. When Donald Trump comes at her tonight, and you've got to imagine that he'll at least be sort of coming back with certain counterpunches and things, it won't be as a joke. And it'll be sort of, you know, Donald Trump has rattled several politicians already on his way, not always people who probably wanted to be getting in these down and dirty arguments, or be, you know, using this kind of rhetoric, and they've gone ahead and done it anyway. So Hillary Clinton is going to be trying to keep the focus on him. And as much as we say that Hillary Clinton needs to be careful and not poke the bear too much because Donald Trump is a counterfactor, I think her team actually is hoping that Donald Trump will somehow go off the deep end, will become very belittling and insulting. That even though that might bruise her ego up there on stage, they think it's actually good for their campaign as it makes him look less presidential.
Brad, everybody said that they hope that tonight's debate deals with the issues and the major topics that this country faces. If you had a wish list, I guess, of the top three, what would those three be?
Well, I think that, you know, I hope that we'll hear more about their tax policies and exactly what their plans are. And I hope we hear a little bit more about entitlement reform. You know, this was such a big thing on the Republican side of the aisle as to exactly how you would deal with Social Security and welfare payments and things like that going forward. On the Democratic side, you had Bernie Sanders proposing a more radical plan than Hillary Clinton. Since those primaries ended, we've heard very, very little about what exactly they would do besides sort of broad strokes. So those are the sorts of things you'd hope you'd get into. But then again, maybe Hillary Clinton will really want to talk more about birtherism than her own tax plan and how progressive she is. So we'll see.
If you're Hillary Clinton, do you move forward with talk about foreign immigrants coming into the country, or do you leave that alone a little bit?
Yeah, I mean that's the question is do you want to play to America's hopes or do you want to play to sort of America's fears about terrorism? Do you want to come off as the weaker candidate who can't handle the terrorism conversation? Hillary Clinton certainly has shown herself to be sort of a defense hawk, but she's also got to sort of please people on the left who very much want to hear her say that refugees should be coming into the country. So overall, I mean, I can't say if it'll help her or hurt her, but it's a tricky line for her to walk with herself as well as undecided voters, I think.
And this breaking news in from a texter from the 815 area code, Rosie O'Donnell will now be in the front row.
Oh, that'll be fun.
To spark things up.
Good.
I have yet to confirm that, but that's another thing that Donald Trump could. Well, you know, if Mark Cuban owns the Dallas Mavericks, I guess you could call this sort of strategy the way they're really distracting balloons behind the backboard during a free throw. That sort of seems to be the strategy here.
Oh, we shall see what we shall see tonight. Debate starts 8 o'clock. Is it Central time?
Yeah, that's right. 8 p.m. Central.
All right,
we'll have coverage, by the way, on ABC Digital starting 2 hours prior. So if you're not done talking about it, then we got all sorts of stuff for you.
Will you do a report from the Jumpy House?
From the bounce house. It's outside the secure zone, so I don't want any more pat downs than I.
Thank you so much, Brad. Godspeed.
Thanks, Brad. That's Brad Melke of ABC News, stationed at Hofstra University, the site of tonight's debates. We'll take a quick break, and then more of your thoughts at 312-981-7200. It's Bill Leffin. It's Wendy Snyder on WGN. All right, here's who's cashing in on not just the debate tonight, but on the election itself. There's an ice cream place in New York. It's called Ample Hills Creamery, and they have devoted...
I got your Ample Hills right here.
They have devoted a flavor to each of the two candidates. Hillary Clinton's is called Madam President. Here's what it includes. Oh, it starts out so good and then it doesn't end well. Madam President, made for Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Clinton, is a combination of Hillary's two favorite foods. That would be chocolate and hot peppers. The chocolate part I'm on board with, the hot peppers part, not really. The flavor contains chili peppered infused chocolate with chunks of chocolate chip cookies. It's supposed to be indicative of Clinton's sugar and spice personality.
Made with sugar and spice and women's rights.
Right.
I like the madam.
Yeah.
Because they say Mr. President.
Madam
You'd think it
President.
Would be Mrs. President, although
no,
that
madam
sounds stupid.
President sounds more mysterious.
I would say madame.
Madame President. Now, the more interesting flavor is Donald Trump's flavor. It's called Trump's Make America Orange Again. It has orange marshmallow creamsicle flavor sprinkled with chocolate brownie bricks so that you can build a wall. That's kind of funny.
Although I'll tell you, his sounds better. The orange marshmallow ice cream would be kind of like a dreamsicle.
That part does sound good. And actually, the little bits of chocolate also sound good. It has not swayed my vote, however. You can snag either of these flavors, it says, at any Ample Hills New York locations through Election Day. That's in November. You can also get some on their website. If you purchase a scoop, the Vote 4-pack, it costs you $40. You also get 2 pints of each flavor, and you will get 3 campaign buttons. and the campaign buttons all say "Scoop the Vote" with a giant ice cream cone.
Donald Trump is calling you.
Is he calling me? I can't take the call right now. Is that your phone?
It's not mine.
I wonder whose phone that is. It's not mine either. Mine's turned off.
Now it is.
No, it is. That's not my phone. I wouldn't know how to make my... That ring sounded important. I don't get calls important enough to have that kind of ring.
That is my ringtone, but I have it off and nobody called me.
It was coming from behind you. Seriously.
Well, who left the phone in there?
I don't know.
Because, you know, I have that ringtone because, you know what it is, the 24 ringtone.
Is that what it is?
That's what I have on my phone, but I turned it off.
No, mine plays the theme from Full House.
So you guys aren't getting calls down there?
No,
coming up here. I'm talking to all. They keep ringing on my hotline up here.
No, I don't know. I don't know what it is.
Oh, well, is that the hotline phone that rang? And why is it ringing when the microphones are on? That's a problem.
I don't know.
It was not mine.
This panic that you're feeling towards tonight's debate, is this adding to it?
It's coming true.
It's actually happening.
The bat phone.
That was the bat phone?
Yeah.
No kidding, though. The lines keep ringing up here.
I don't know why.
Well, we're having some trouble with our phones, so we can't take phone calls.
That's my point. I think they've been diverted up here to this
they're rerouted
console that I don't really know how to use.
Steve, do you know, I asked a question earlier that I can't figure out. Last night during the Cubs game on ESPN, they were touting the fact that if you wanted to watch tonight's Monday Night Football game, which is on ESPN, and the debates, you can do that. ESPN isn't going to show the debates. They're not going to show a double screen.
No.
What were they getting at?
I don't know. I heard you say that earlier. I don't know what they would have been talking about.
They had an ad this morning that was, watch the debate, make sure to watch the debate on TV, and then the watch ESPN app for all your sports. They said, go to Real TV debate, but then, hey, remember us on your phone and tablet and computer.
That makes a little more sense. All right. I couldn't figure out. What are you doing? You're just... I wish people could see you right now. You're just picking up anything in the studio that you can to see if a phone comes through.
This phone is ringing.
Yeah, that's the in-studio phone.
Yeah, but it's not supposed to ring on the air when the mics are on.
It's not supposed to, but it has been for the last 10 minutes. I don't know why.
Yeah, what do you want me to tell him? Okay. Right. I'll just answer him up here, Wendy.
Oh, my God. They have sabotaged our radio show.
Commissioner Gordon.
It's Russia.
Oh, don't. Joey, don't even tease.
All right, well, shall we take a break?
Yeah.
I can't. This is driving me insane.
It sounds like a telethon in here.
Let's go to the tote board.
Right. We're going to meet Shecky Green, find out what he's up to in just a little bit. And Chad Everett joins us right after the news.
Oh, my God, shut up.
I know. It's the hotline, Wendy. It's important.
But it's not even ringing.
Well, what do you call that?
Well, I mean, I'm not seeing anything flashing.
That's because HR already talked to it.
Look out the window.
Can I answer it?
Yeah, see who it is.
Hi, who's this?
This is the Illinois Bell. We understand you have a problem with your telephone.
Yeah, well, you're calling from the 80s, right? Because Illinois Bell hasn't really existed.
I'm so confused. What should I do? My phone's ringing. Yeah. And I don't know. What should I do?
Get a DeLorean.
Oh, no, that isn't even you ringing.
It's a separate ring.
No, it's Vito. Wendy, it's Vito.
I got to go.
How did he get the hotline number?
I don't know, but I can't even stop it. He's calling on every line.
Every line is ringing, right?
Right, because the 981-7200 has been switched over somehow to... the hotline.
Gelman, what did you do?
I answered a phone and then the system crashed.
Never happened when Kevin was here.
Never happened when Kevin was here. Never.
That's the problem. You answered the phone. Was it Vito?
No. It was a normal caller. I put them on hold.
A normal caller.
Put it in that way.
Take that, Vito.
Thank you, Vito, by the way. All right, let's take a break.
Maybe
you'll hear the phone ringing during the commercials.
Wouldn't that be
something?
That'd be great. All right, more show, we hope. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Listen to that thing.
It's beautiful. All right, to everybody who's trying to call us and can't get through, we apologize. They are currently working on the phones. We hope to have them back up and running soon.
Vito's
currently working on the phones.
Illinois Bell, that was so funny.
I heard that noise, and I swear to you, I thought you were playing Pong during the show. I looked over, it's like, when did you get a Pong machine?
And I looked at you thinking in my head, you know, you were getting calls during the lunch break. Maybe you forgot to turn it off.
Mm-mm. Nope, there it is.
Oh, my God.
That's not distracting at all. No, don't. All right, it's news time right now. This news report is sponsored by the CME Group and Illinois Bell, making your phones
it
work better
like
than
it's
ever.
Sick.
Here, yeah, it is. It's a dated kind of a. Oh, that's sad.
It's like a cricket with rickets.
Yes, it is.
Go
Steve.
Cubs!
Yeah. Here with the news again, sponsored by the CME Group. Although they're rethinking this. Here's Steve Bertrand. Steve, thank you. It's Bill F. It's Wendy Snyder. We are told by Marge, the switchboard operator, that the phones are once again in working order. So if you want
a
to call
one
in,
ringy dingy. a two ringy dingy.
If you want to call in 312-981-7200, you can text us at that same number if you live in the present. Oh, there it goes again. What?
That's me.
Is that
Sorry,
you?
I just like messing with
Oh, man.
Uh-oh, no, I can't
Now you can't make it stop.
All right, don't.
Another quick political note. You know, tonight the debates are going on. So
they are?
Yeah, they're in the news, Wendy. The debates are in the news. So one more quick political thing to either settle your nerves or make you even more frustrated. Do you remember during the Republican debates, there was, and it was subtle, so you really had to look with a microscope, there was some tension between Donald Trump and Ted Cruz. Do you remember any of that? A little bit of
little
tension?
Bit.
Yeah.
A little bit.
So on Friday, Ted Cruz formally endorsed Donald Trump for the office of President of the United States. Isn't that curious?
A little bit. A little bit.
You know, I've said this in the past, and I'll say it again right now just to prove. I understand the way that politics works. I get that you have to be a part of a major party, that even though everybody wants to be a lone wolf to some extent in politics, you really can't survive under those tactics. You have to have the backing of a political party. You kind of have to. So that said, it still disturbs me that Ted Cruz and Donald Trump, who obviously saw eye to eye on almost nothing at all, they had nicknames for each other, they would take jabs at each other, at each other's families. That Ted
it
Cruz,
really got ugly between
got
the two of them.
It got as ugly as it could have possibly
well, I mean,
have gotten.
Donald Trump accused Ted Cruz as a father of being a cohort of
Kennedy's assassination.
Oh, yeah.
Harvey Oswald.
Right.
I forgot about that.
Yeah.
That wasn't a lie.
So is Ted apparently forgotten about it.
So how do you go from that? How do you go from being referred to as lying Ted on a daily basis? What makes you wake up one day and say, you know, let's let bygones be bygones. The election's coming up in a month and a half. That's my guy, that Donald Trump. What would have to possibly happen for
next
that to
election?
Be? Is that what it is?
It has to be. Because
people say that about Cruz, too, about Rubio also,
yeah.
That he's looking forward, that Marco Rubio's looking forward to 4 years from now. He's not thinking about today. But doesn't that just say that everybody's in it for themselves when you sell out to that extent? When you take somebody who's badmouthed you for months and months and months and you go, yeah, I thought about it. All right, you got my vote. Everybody vote for that guy. I don't understand that at all.
Well, isn't he staying true to the Republican Party?
Yeah, there's
that.
That's
where he could say, well, I don't want to, but I have to.
Do you remember how they all signed a document saying that when and if they are not going to be that party's nominee, that they would endorse no matter who it is? And they all signed it. And then Trump said about a week and a half later, yeah, I know I signed it, but I'm not going to do that if it's somebody else. As much as I don't like Donald Trump, I respected that part of him.
Well, how can you respect that part of it and not the other ones? Because that's what I don't respect about him, is he doesn't want to play by the rules that are there. He wants his own rules.
Yeah, yeah.
So I don't respect that at all.
All right, first of all, I never would have signed that piece of paper under any circumstances.
Then they wouldn't let you run.
Was that the caveat?
Is that true, Steve?
Steve, were you not allowed to run if you didn't sign that piece of paper?
I don't think they could have kept you from running.
Well, then why would anybody sign it?
I think it was a sign of
solidarity,
goodwill, and the fact, too, you know.
Who has solidarity and goodwill at this point in time?
Well, back then, if you get others to sign it, then the idea was that they would support you if you won as well, not just that you'd have to support them.
Trust no one. Seriously.
I know. I know.
Times, they are a-changing.
But all right, let's say, and this is as extreme a circumstance as I could possibly come up with in my head. If I was one of the candidates and they sat me down and they said, all right, look, I know you and the other candidates don't really get along. We get that. But at some point, it's going to be one man down, another man down, another man down. And when you're one of the guys who's down, you got to support that guy. I'd say thanks, but no thanks. There's no way in the world. I don't like him. He doesn't like me. Why would I endorse him? So I don't understand. I know these guys. I know.
Because then you won't be able to run again. Nobody would be.
And remember, they're part of a club. They're part of the of a party, whether it's Democrat or Republican.
But isn't that that at the base of this? What's wrong with this system?
Yes,
it is, isn't it?
I asked you guys a while ago why we can't do away with the two-party system. Can't happen.
But
it's
then,
not what's wrong with it, Bill. If the two parties are fighting for ideas, you know, and if one party has one set of ideas and the other has the other set, you know, then that's okay if you're all working together to further those ideas.
But then, all right, I understand that. But then, what happens when you get guys like, you know, the other day George Bush, original recipe George Bush said, "I'm going to vote for Hillary Clinton." Right? You saw that, right?
Yeah, he was quoted as saying that.
Yeah. All right. So what does that do? Does that doesn't break up the party? The party just goes, okay, there's a guy who's weighed his options and he went with Hillary Clinton. That doesn't destroy the party. Ted Cruz or Marco Rubio destroy the party?
Well, Ted Cruz or Marco Rubio want to run again. So it benefits them to be on board rather than, you know, just think if Donald Trump loses by a percentage and Ted Cruz, or let's do Rubio. Let's say that Trump loses Florida by a half a percentage point and Marco Rubio didn't endorse him.
Right.
That's going to crush Rubio with the rest of the party leaders when it comes time for him to run again. Now, Donald Trump won without support from any of the party leaders.
Right.
So maybe it's not as important as it used to be.
But isn't the trade-off there? I know that everybody keeps saying that with any of these people who are endorsing Trump after not liking him for so many months, that the trade-off is 4 years down the line. But isn't this the clearest cut example of just selling out your integrity? I mean, I can't think of something that shows more of a sellout than this, than taking somebody you don't see eye to eye with and going, yeah, all right, you got my support. It doesn't make sense. Cruz would never support him after what we just saw the last few months.
Chris Christie's aides are on trial right now and testifying that he knew about the bridge scandal.
Right.
Back when the bridge scandal was breaking or early in the campaign,
right.
Donald Trump said, of course he knew. He knew.
Right, I remember that.
Chris Christie is now one of Donald Trump's biggest champions.
Yeah.
So it's politics, maybe.
So what's in it for Christie in that particular instance? Is he looking at 4 years down the line?
He's hoping the pictures don't get released, think.
Maybe.
No, I don't know. Frankly, that one I don't get because he is out fighting hard for him.
But Steve, with him, like initially when he started showing up at all the rallies and standing behind Donald Trump, didn't you go, well, he's just vying for the vice presidential chair at this point. But once he didn't get that, what was in it for him to still stick around?
Well, he's been chosen as the head of the transition committee.
Yeah.
You know, which is a position of power.
Yeah.
And authority. But I don't know. I don't know why that would keep a guy around, frankly.
Mary thinks she might know why Cruz is voting for Trump. Hi, Mary.
I just wanted to let you know that I heard him explain why he's doing it.
Why did he?
It was because he really still doesn't go completely along with Trump and his ideas.
Yeah.
But he said the Supreme Court, she will get the opportunity of possibly naming two judges, and he'd rather Trump get in there and be the one to name them.
Boy,
that's kind of messed up, though, too.
No, it isn't in a way, because as you can see, we're waiting right now because the Republicans didn't want to vote for this other gentleman because they were saying, we don't know, we're going to get the same kind of judges, we're going to have these ties. Scalia's gone.
Right.
We'll never have that one judge who will go either way. He will think about it, and he will go either way.
I don't think Scalia was really known for going either way.
I love that man.
Well, you can love him, but I don't think
he wasn't
like a swing voter.
These other ones. Roberts used to be the one I thought was great, but he's gone. He's left. But this is what Cruz said. I'm just telling you because you mentioned I don't understand how he could do this.
That's interesting you say that, because why has Roberts gone or left?
Because he hasn't gone. He's just mentally not with it anymore.
But see, that's because he's now voting with either side from time to time, just what you say you want.
But he isn't. Roberts was just voting for the other side. He's voting. He went Democrat now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, pay attention.
Pay attention, Steve.
Yeah, do it. Mary, thank you for calling.
Thanks, Mary.
Watch the debate tonight.
I'll have to watch more closely.
Yes. All right, let's take a quick break, and then more of your thoughts, more of our ideas. We're at 312-981-7200. You can call us or text us. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
All right, Bill. We only have a couple minutes here before Roe and Anna come in.
Can we talk non-politics? Although, I say that, but there's politics actually seeping into this story.
Someone said you two are politically swiving idiots.
They are correct.
And you would have to listen to the earlier portion of the show when we talked to the linguist, Ben Bergen. And you can also always, rather, check out the podcast, WGNRadio.com. We post the full show.
He taught us a new swear word, didn't he?
Yeah, I hope you can say it on the
air. I don't think you can. I'm pretty sure you can.
Well, I just was reading a text.
Oh, all right. Then it's fine. They did a poll to find out who is the National Football League's most disliked player. I was going to say most hated player, but that sounds too much. So the most disliked player in the NFL. Now, here in Chicago,
yeah,
I think
I
if it was just a locally held contest, I think I know who it would be. Don't you think? If it was Chicagoans only.
So you have number six?
Could be. Is he married to a model?
Could
actress,
be.
Model actress? Yeah, could be.
Kevin Richter?
It is not Kevin Richter, Joey. That's a great guess. Joey, looking for a full-time job with us.
Yes, obviously.
I think if it was just a Chicago-only poll, I can't imagine Jay Cutler not winning this.
Cutler would top, you know, at least he'd top that poll.
Yeah, that would be the one thing he'd be ranked number one in among active quarterbacks. He didn't even make the top three, by the way.
Because nobody's noticing him.
Right, maybe.
Who?
Maybe.
The Bears? They have a team? Chicago has a team?
The fourth most disliked NFL player is Ben Roethlisberger. He is the quarterback for the Pittsburgh Steelers. He's had his troubles.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of his.
All right, so he's number four. Number three least liked NFL player would be Tom Brady. That's surprising.
He's a cheater. I know Anna loves him.
He does have an issue with deflated footballs. I get that.
Cheater.
All right. So I can that's warranted then. All right.
And not that good looking. Sorry.
Number two, Wendy, the second most hated NFL player. I shouldn't say hated. Let's go with most disliked. Hated. Just
they put hated down on this poll?
I've seen one story where it said hated and this one says disliked. But
I
hated
like disliked.
Seems to. Yeah, disliked seems more accurate to me. Ndamukong Suh. Of the Miami Dolphins.
What's he done?
He has a propensity to play a little dirty. He doesn't just want to tackle a guy. He wants to hurt a guy. He's in it to hurt a guy. So because of that, Ndamukong Suh is the second most disliked player in the NFL. And I think the main reason that the name Ndamukong isn't as popular as it used to be. Remember there was a time if you sat in a class of 30 kids, half the kids' name were Ndamukong?
Yes, I do, Bill.
A boy named Ndamukong Suh. Remember that song? the most disliked player in the NFL, Wendy, and I think most people would have probably guessed it by now. I don't think you would have made this poll last year or 2 years ago. Colin Kaepernick is the most disliked player in the NFL today.
He's very polarizing. People are either so for or against what he's doing. But didn't we also do a story that that's the number one jersey being sold these days?
You know what's funny? Yes. And people said, well, people were joking around. We had people text in, yeah, so people could burn it. And I thought, who's going to spend $125 to burn a jersey? And then I saw online over the weekend, there's two different versions you can buy of the jersey, the regular one and the one that they said is easily flammable.
Okay, now, first of all, why is there an easily flammable jersey?
I'm hoping, I'm praying, and I rarely pray, but in this case I'm praying that somebody photoshopped that there really isn't a highly flammable version of Colin Kaepernick's jersey. That would be awful. That would be a terrible, terrible thing. But I could see where people might buy it to do bad things to it, but it's such an expensive investment.
Can I tell you that, yes, a football jersey is typically an expensive investment. So if you're Jay Cutler and you happen to have your jersey floating on, I think it was a TJ Maxx or Marshalls in the clearance rack for $20.
Oh, yeah. Has it gone down to $20?
Granted, it's a kid's jersey, okay? But extra large kids can fit adults.
Sure.
And that's pretty sad.
Yeah. Yep.
That's really sad.
Did you see Mike Ditka's comments about Colin Kaepernick?
Yes.
He wants him out of the country. Get out of the country.
All this traveling abroad. Everybody's leaving the country.
I know.
Come on. We got to make America great again.
And the way to do that is to help travel agents. There was a time where travel agents were really hurting for cash, but now that everybody wants to leave the country, those guys are cleaning up, those travel agents. And then Colin Kaepernick over the weekend showed up at some high school where high school kids said that they were also not going to stand for the national anthem. So he showed up and showed his support.
Can I tell you something? That bothers me. He's getting paid lots of money to do what he's doing. He's donating money.
He's donating some of it.
To what? To where? I still don't. Charities.
To causes that are of the same like mind, of causes that say. And.
Well, do we know that for a fact?
Yeah. He's been.
Pretty vocal about that.
He's absolutely showed that he's giving away money. Over $1 million so far, by the way.
All right, but this is his living. He can choose. He makes enough money where if he's not making money for a game or whatever.
Right.
These are kids. I don't think he should be messing with that. Stand for your flag and show your support for our country. And when you're an adult, do what you want. It's a free country to make up your own mind. But as a kid, come on.
Yeah.
That bugs me. I think that's irresponsible.
It's such a tough situation because he, without a doubt, he has a point. There's racial injustice that you can't even argue that. So the key is finding a better way. I mean, if his goal was to call attention to it, he has called attention to it.
And what has changed?
Nothing's changed. It's just as bad.
So what's
the thing is you got to figure out some way to channel it that's better than this. I just don't know what it is. But he is, as of now, the most disliked player in the NFL, and yet his jersey outsells everybody else's.
Does that show you what's happening to this country?
I know. It's a very strange parallel, isn't it? All right. We'll take a quick break, and then in a little while, Roe and Anna will be by. They're on next, so we'll find out what they have in store for you. It's Bill Leff, and it's Wendy Snyder on WGN. All right. That's it for us for today. Once again, the debates are on tonight. Enjoy them with your loved ones. It should be a fun evening. Fun action-packed evening.
I don't think you'd watch the debates with your loved ones, because then they wouldn't
the
be your loved
with
ones.
People you don't care for, and see how that plays out. Roe and Anna are here. Will you guys mention the debates in any way, shape, or form today? Do you think
it might come up? I'm thinking about. I have a lot of thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
None of them are good.
Oh,
and I wonder, and I think I like a lot of Americans. How did we get here?
Mm-hmm.
And
David Byrne was right.
Yes, he was. He was totally right. And
we all have to get big suits now.
Yeah, because I don't recognize what's happening here. The cable news outlets are so frothy about this.
Sure,
this is like their greatest moment ever.
Yeah,
there's 100 million people available, and all they want to do is slice that pie six ways.
Yeah,
and it's glory days for all. Yeah. They may just, you know, quote the boss too on top of everything.
Springsteen and David Byrne.
Yeah,
dancing in the dark.
That's exactly what's going on. And I like this. As long as Donald Trump doesn't turn into Frankenstein halfway through, it's fine.
Yeah.
Why is it fine then?
And he wins. They say if he acts presidential, that's all. Right now, you realize this? I mean, he ultimately more Republicans vote against him than for him, right?
Yeah.
He still has a lot of Republicans to bring on board, for sure.
But he's brought so many on. Why is he tied with her?
Mm-hmm.
He's tied with her today, 46-46.
I got to go home.
Why is that? He doesn't really need to bring that many more Republicans on board. The problem is Democrats aren't going to go out and vote for her.
Well, independents are going his way at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
you said
it wasn't going to happen.
I told you guys it was going to happen. I said to Bill, Trump is going to be our president. And you said, no way.
And I said, no way, too. I thought he'd
drop it. It's
out.
Happening.
Every day, the New York Times puts out a statistic, a percentage of him becoming president. And it was, at the end of August, it was 6% to her 94.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It is now 30 to her 70.
Oh.
She has the same chance, according to the New York Times, of winning this as an NFL player has of missing a 45-yard field goal, an NFL kicker.
Now, because they show us the Bears here in Chicago, you have to remind me what an NFL player is. You said NFL player?
Yes, that's different.
That?
Plus, don't we have a kicker that missed one of those like last week?
Yeah.
First week.
Yeah. That was a 31-yarder, to be clear.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Even worse.
Right.
Thanks, Kevin.
So I just don't want to. I mean, don't use that kicking analogy with us.
Yeah. Right.
Doesn't work for us.
No.
All right, it'll be fine.
No,
it's
it won't.
Be fine.
What part of fine is it going to be?
Also, I meant Larry Fine.
We'll get you caught up. We'll get you caught up.
Larry the cheese. It's orange too.
Ben Bradley is going to join us. They've made an arrest in the Michigan Avenue shooting.
Oh, good.
On Saturday night.
Yeah.
How troubling is that? You think about how many kids are around and just that setting.
Too many guns.
And known gangbanger with two gun arrests this summer.
Right. It speaks to the narrative.
And a tattooed head. He doesn't have hair. He has a tattooed head.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's a guy. I'm sorry. That's a guy I just don't pick a fight with. Guy with a tattoo on his head.
You can't pick a fight with anybody anymore.
No, you really
can't. You can't even flip people off in the car anymore.
What has happened to America?
I know, when Donald Trump is president,
you'll be able to flip people off of the car.
Plenty of flipping.
All right. Oh, and Alan Dershowitz is going to be here to explain what Donald Trump has to do right and wrong in the debate.
He has a great book with an amazing title, doesn't he?
Electile Dysfunction.
Perfect.
All right. We'll explain all of that.
Have a good show, guys.
Thank you very much.